Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, October 22nd, 2018. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you are listening live over another radio or over our radio program or another network, and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250. And our access code is 449-389-POUND. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to read tonight a couple of verses out of the Gospel of John. We're in chapter 7. I'm going to pick up at verse 25. Last week, Jesus was speaking about his doctrine and about Moses, and some seek to kill him. And we're going to pick it up right there, verse 25. Then said some of them of Jerusalem, "Is not this he whom they seek to kill? But lo, he speaketh boldly, but they say nothing unto him. Do the rulers know indeed that this is the very Christ? Howbeit we know this man whence he is, but when Christ cometh, no man knoweth whence he is." Then cried Jesus in the temple as he taught, saying, "Ye both know me, and you know whence I am, and I am not come of myself, but of he that sent me is true, whom ye know not. But I know him, for I am from him, and he hath sent me. Then they sought to take him, but no man laid hands on him, because his hour was not yet come. And many of the people believed on him and said, when Christ cometh, will he do more miracles than these which this man hath done? The Pharisees heard that the people murmured such things concerning him, and the Pharisees and the chief priests sent officers to take him. Then said Jesus unto them, yet a little while, and I am with you, and then I go unto him that sent me. Ye shall seek me, and shall not find me. And whence I am, hither ye cannot come. Then said the Jews among themselves, whither will he go, that we shall not find him? Will he go on to the dispersed among the Gentiles and teach the Gentiles? I may stop there. Let's see what verse we're in here. Well, let me just read this last verse. What manner of saying is this, that he said, ye shall seek me and shall not find me, and where I am, thither ye cannot come? In the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried, saying, if any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. He that believeth on me, as Scripture saith, hath out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. Okay, we're going to stop there. We'll pick back up next week. Probably go back and read from verse 37. Okay, just a reminder, we still have the campaign for constitutional sheriffs going on. We'd like to buy booklets, about 100,000 of them that we've written. There's going to be an overhaul on that book. There is a copy that people can get up on the website at nationallibertyalliance.org. Front page, you should find it as you scroll down and read through our front page. You should see the opportunity to download a PDF copy of that handbook. But we do want to make pocket handbooks, and we'd like to send about 20 of them to each one of the sheriffs across the nation. There's over 3,100 and plus counties. So there's a lot of sheriffs and over 3,000 sheriffs, and we want to get at least 20 in each one of their hands. And for those who will ask for more, we want to be able to send them out too. But we've calculated that cost to cost us about 35 cents a piece. So the 100,000 is $35,000. Also, mailing to 3,100 sheriffs, it's about 20 ounces for 20 handbooks, maybe a little more. We calculated about $6.50 for each mailing to box it and mail it. And it's another $20,000 for a total of about $55,000. So again, if anybody would like to contribute to that. We also, we got an answer on the SAFE Act. I haven't been able to get the answer up. They threw us out again under Rule 12. We're going to have a meeting for New Yorkers, those involved in the case, to come together. I believe it's going to be Wednesday night at 7. Let me see.
Yes, John.
Yeah.
I posted the material on the website under the Second Amendment page.
Okay, so you put the answer that they sent us.
Yeah, I put,
yeah,
put
it's pretty silly.
The dismissal in their justification vote.
Yeah, it's a pretty silly paper. I mean, whether we appeal or not, we're gonna put an answer in on that. But I'd like to appeal to go to the appellate court, their bosses, to talk to them about it and see once what they have to say. But that's going to cost money. So those are the people involved in that case. We've got how many people are in that case? Between 30 and 40 people? About roughly, do you know, John?
45 people.
40. All right,
45.
Well, yep. 45. Okay, we need about $1,000 to go forward. It's $505 to file. I mean, that's ridiculous, but that's what they charge. It's $105 more than to file a case, to file an appeal. And but in any event, about $1,000 is what we're going to need to file the appeal and run the paperwork through. I do think we could win on the appeal. Trump has replaced some of the appellate court judges down there in New York, In New York, there's only one federal appeals court, and it's down in New York City. And so that's where we would go, and we know that Trump did put some new people down that way, and hopefully, by God's will, we'll land under some of them that may finally decide to obey the law. But anyway, case can continue. It's going to also become part of the other case that we're writing, which is a lawsuit against the judiciary, which is still coming along. We're still writing. You know, also we're working on the book. I'm writing a book, and matter of fact, we're going to read a few pieces out of that book tonight, maybe. But I'm writing a book, and kind of writing the book and working the paperwork kind of goes hand in hand. I'm sticking on the subject matters within some of these chapters so that we can get this case written and filed as soon as possible. And the other thing, of course, is we're putting the course. We'd like to get the course up, I think. How's things going on the two papers I sent you, Jan? Have you been able to get through one or two of them yet?
Yes, I finished up the first one. I'm working on the second one. Okay. Jim
Hold
says
on.
Apparently the response from the New York State SAFE Act said there were only 33 plaintiffs, but we have emails from 45 people that apparently signed up. I'm not sure where the discrepancy comes from.
Yeah,
that's
we'll have to go in and
they
look.
Didn't include.
Yeah, what happened was, you know, look, these people are inept. They don't even know what they're doing half the time, in my opinion. And but when we first filed it, we had probably about 30-some-odd people, and then more people signed on, and we added that, and they may not be making that count. But, yeah, I think there was more than 30. But we'll work that out. Okay, anyway, we did, Jan is working with others to perfect the papers that we've written up here for the course, which is also for the book. Matter of fact, the book and the course are the same to some degree. There's going to be more in the book, but big, huge chunks of the book is going to be in the course. So writing one or the other, you know, by writing the book, I'm writing the course at the same time, and also the subject matters. You know, we'll also apply to a great degree to the case that we are filing against the judiciary. So it's kind of being written all three at the same time, so to speak. I passed the preface, which we'll call probably the introduction on the course. We'll call it a preface in the book. But the introduction is, as Jan was saying, he's working on that, checking the grammar and punctuation and other things, and he's working with others on that. We got chapter one. He should be working on that next. Chapter two is almost done, so I'll be applying that. So I think by next week we might be able to have at least the introduction, two chapters, maybe even three chapters up online and open up that course. And then it's a matter of me keeping ahead of the course as best that I can. Some people, you know, may really put a lot of time into it, bang through it quickly. But I think most people will be putting a little time here, a little time there to get the course done, and I'm hopefully should be able to stay ahead of most people. There's going to be about 14 chapters, roughly. And again, as I was saying, the case for the judiciary is being written at the same time, and I'm not sure exactly when we're going to file it. I mean, I'd love to file it next week, but I can't say that we can't, you know, but who knows? We'll see how it goes and how much work we can get going this week for the next 7 days, get some writing. You know, I did work all weekend on this thing. I'm trying to stay away from my phones and so on so we can get this thing done. Plus, we have other things to do. So anyway, going back to the New York SAFE Act, we have 21 days, I believe, to file for an appeal. And these people require payment, like, real quick. I've already done this once. And, I mean, they give you a real hard time. They want their money. And we shouldn't be giving them anything. But that is all proof. That's all evidence that they're selling justice. That's what they're doing. They're selling justice. I've been doing a lot of studying in the process of writing. And pulling a lot of new things out, getting a few little epiphanies here or there and things that I didn't realize, you know, and now it's something I understand more. Of course, that's the way life should be, as you look at something more and more and pick at it more and more, dig into it more and more. You become more and more knowledgeable, you find corrections, and you get a much better understanding. And we're going to talk about a few things tonight concerning what's in the book. As a matter of fact, I might be pulling pieces of the book out every week just to focus in on the subject. Okay, let's see. We still do need some volunteers. Everyone should volunteer, you know, an hour a week or more. People who are retired or whatever, they can probably give us more time. But if you can't give us an hour a week, maybe you can give us an hour a month. You know, we've got over 7,000 members now. And, you know, if all our members were to give us an hour a month, that's 7,000 hours. Just imagine that. So we do need help. We need people to make phone calls, to welcome people into our membership and kind of walk them through some of the things that they might want to look at and think about and come to an understanding on. We need help with what we're calling that the committee, welcoming committee. We also need some assistance. I don't know, is anyone out there trying to get Gerard and myself onto radio programs and TV programs for interviews? I noticed we went on to Thomas's radio program, was the last weekend, I think it was, and it broadcasted, I guess, over the weekend or in the beginning of the week. Well, I forget exactly when all that was. Time just washes right by me these days. I can't discern one day from the next because I'm so deep into what we're doing here. But in any event, we did pick up, goodness, had to be at least a dozen or 20 new members. So that's pretty good. And, so in that time period, a small time period, so just a couple of days, so it's a little bit of a pump. We need to get out more and more. We need to get on radio programs, TV programs. Need to get the message out. I'd like to get on X22 Report. I'd like to be interviewed by that guy. There's other people. I know Bannon's site. Steve Bannon has a site that he had sort of inherited. Breitbart, I believe it's called. And I know they do interviews. I'd like to get interviewed on that site. We have other people. We've got about 20 different radio programs, TV programs we've been on before. We need to get back onto those programs, and we need to get our message back on point. Do we have anyone working on that, Jan? And I presume we still need more help on that, or what?
Yeah, we have not had anyone volunteer. I sent up a query to URPTV, and I'm waiting to hear back on that, but... that's where we stand at the moment.
Okay.
We could use help.
Maybe you could go up to the list of programs we've been on before. We've got a lot of radio interviews up there, and maybe go through that and see if we can get returns on some of those interviews.
Okay.
I know they've all told us to come back in another time. We've got new stuff. And I do want to pump the main message that we've been bringing out. But also, again, is if we can get a list of different groups that are out there that have... a lot of people that listen in that are already in the game, so to speak, doing what we're doing. And hang on a minute. All right. And, we could build our membership. It's time that we got to get going to the point of critical mass. This is the case we're writing is one we've been waiting to get to for many years now. Into the court, and of course Trump is really starting to drain out that swamp pretty good, and I think there's going to be a lot of big things happening soon, we hope, and we'll see where that goes. But again, I see our success running alongside of that. We need that critical mass, and we need people to understand how important it is to have a proper education. I'll call it a Jefferson education. The most important things we need to know, that's what's going to be in this course and also in the book. And again, we're moving as fast as we can on that. But hopefully next week we'll have some good news, and hopefully we'll open up the course and get that going. And hopefully, some weeks down the line, we'll get the book done and see about trying to get that published. Okay, let's see what else here we've got. in the book, and I think I start off in the book concerning this, and talking about liberty. Most people do not know what liberty is. You know, if you ask anybody what liberty is, they'll say freedom of this and freedom of that and so on and so forth. But, you know, liberty is ultimately, what liberty actually is, okay, is freedom from all positive law. Freedom from the law. That's what liberty is. If you go into the Bible speaks about that. That's what liberty is. You can't have liberty. Who do we have liberty? Who do you want liberty from? I mean, why do we put a Bill of Rights up there? It's because the government, Washington told us that government is like a fire, and it's going to burn you. We have to control it. Jefferson said we got to tie it down with the chains of the Constitution. So it's a hot fire that needs to be tied down. And that's what our founding documents do. But we've lost control of that. The founding documents have no effect on these people. They walk all over it. They tread it underfoot. And we, the people, need to step up and demand their obedience to it or get rid of these people. And there are ways to do this, but we have to seize the points of power. And generally, there's two points. It's the courts. We must take 100% control of the courts when it has to do with courts of justice. You know, not what had anything going on necessarily with the courts that identify with a particular law that is legislated. And by the way, positive law is law created by humans. That's what positive law is. And that's a pretty slick name they gave it. Positive law, law created by, legislated by humans. So it's legislation, free from statutes, free from legislation. That's what liberty is, to not have them bind us down. We are not subject, although they think we are subject. We are not subject to their statutes, to their laws. We may be subject to their laws if we participate in some activity that puts us underneath one of those USC titles. Okay. There's a title out there for bankruptcy, for instance. It controls and goes through the process of bankruptcy. And so we would be underneath that law if we were going to go into that court and file for bankruptcy. We'd have to go according to the legislated rules on that, and that's understandable. It's appropriate. And we gave Congress that power in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. We gave them the power to write lots of codes. And we talked about this last week, I believe. There's 57 USC titles. 27 of them are called positive law or enacted, and the other 27 are not. But the other 27 that are not are regulations. It's how they run agencies, by those regulations. You know, you ever go into the post office, maybe talk to those people about different things, and they'll say, "Well, we got regulations we got to follow," and they'll tell you what the regulations are. If you have to deal with IRS and you're communicating with them, they'll tell you about regulations. Okay. And that's a whole different animal, by the way, because we're not under USC 26. But maybe one day we'll talk about that. Today I want to look a little bit under USC 18. And we did talk a little bit about this in the past, but I want to read some excerpts out of it's going to be inside in the book. It's already been written. I have not articulated this outside, out loud, so, we may find some errors in English or whatever. But let me see. When you tell people that liberty is freedom from law or freedom from statutes or freedom from positive law, whichever word you want to use, it doesn't make us free from natural law. No man is free from natural law. Although God has law and statutes, law that he expects mankind to initiate and exercise, certain law, for instance, and particularly in courts of justice. You know, that's why we have, jurists, and we have grand juries to indict and trial juries to try, petit juries they call them, and we listen to the facts and we make a decision and a judgment on it with an eye on restitution. That's what natural law is. I am going to start using the word natural law more often than common law. They're synonymous. I've always been using common law mostly because, you know, the Supreme Court cases use the word common law. A lot of writings and different things you look into, you go into Black's Law and you'll find the word common law. They don't use natural law too often. But I see now that this is part of the game that they play. I see now that, and I just kind of saw this, but it just didn't click. You know, I didn't get that epiphany, that like, whoa, that magic moment to say, I see something and I see the game they're playing. When we speak to lawyers, they talk about common law being a collectiveness of federal court decisions, including the United States Supreme Court decisions, the appellate decisions, but any decision in any federal court, which is insane, okay? And we pay no heed to any of that. It's irrelevant. But what went on in that case has nothing to do with us. We have no clue what went on in the case. We don't know the details or the facts. Every case is different. You can't make a square peg go into a round hole. It just doesn't work. And that's what statutes, that's what they try to do with statutes. They try to control the process, the jurisdiction. And they're trying to control people. But anyway, when we talk about common law, I think that's why they're so comfortable. They don't think that they're being subversive because we're talking about common law. We want common law courts. And they say, okay, yeah, we're going to give you that. And they give it to us. And they respond to us in statutes, silly statutes. Anybody who's read the decision on the federal case for here in New York, that we had filed and that they responded to kick us out with Rule 12 again. Big surprise on that. But we can't let that beat us. We still got to keep going. And again, this is a very important case to prove our point. We've got lots of cases that we have been involved with to prove our point that will eventually become evidence in this case, the main case we're going into. But in their response, they responded with statute. They responded with federal court decisions, local federal district courts, not even appellate courts, not the United States Supreme Court, but just decisions by some political animal who is hell-bent on maintaining the status quo and is lining his pockets or getting favor out of it for doing so. And so... That's why I think we need to, you know, focus in and use the word natural, nature's law, natural law. And so I'm going to start using that word more often. And I may constantly be saying, you know, maybe I'll use the word common law, also known as natural law, or natural law, also known as common law, so that we're bringing the two together. Because, again, there's a lot of information on common law that supports our position, and the word common law is used and not natural law. Okay, so when we tell people that liberty is actually freedom from law, we are the lawmakers, we're above the law, okay? Any law of the land, we are above, with the exception, of course, of natural law, which also is part of the law of the land because we've stated so in the Bill of Rights and in a few different places. And the word at law or law means natural law. If it was going to be legislative law, it would be called enacted law, positive law. Enacted law or positive law, legislated law, statutes. Okay, that's what that is. But law, L-A-W, capital L, on its own, or at law, in law, all means natural law. That's the real law. the law of God. Everything else is law that we use to control our government and for the government to control certain things that we gave them the ability to control. And again, if you want to list to that, there's 18 powers on in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. The 18th power is the power to make law on the 17. So, and these are the powers we gave them. You know, naturalization, making law for naturalization, for someone to become a citizen. And again, that's another game they play, that word citizen. Even our founding fathers used it, they turned the meaning of that. And also civil rights. You know, they talk about civil rights. They talk about civil law, civil courts. And that's what we're in, was civil court. Well, that's a statutory court. And we have to make clear our point on the difference between the two. And we'll see where they go if they get a little uncomfortable then, because they think they have a place to hang the hat. They think that they're able to step back. Well, we thought they meant common law, and look at this is what we understand as common law. And you'll read, you know, you go read the books that lawyers have put out, which bores me to tears. I usually go get a few pages in, and I just can't read no more. But in any event, I picked up a few things here or there, and they speak about it in their books. I've read papers as much as I could, but these written by these lawyers, and again, they bring these issues up on common law. This is their common law. They have no clue of what natural law is. They have no understanding, no relationship, no perspective on it at all. So we got to give it to them. Okay. I'm going to read something out of what I wrote, and it's in the book, and it focuses on USC 18. And I know we spoke a little bit about this, but I'd like to read it. Let me go back a minute here. See, hold on a minute. Okay, first I want to read a little bit about liberty and freedom from all which is freedom from all positive law. Let me read a piece of that first, and then we'll see if we get into 18. If we don't do 18 tonight, we'll do it next week. In our republic, common law is the law of the land by which we the people chose to be judged when we assumed among the powers of the earth the separate and equal stations to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitled us. We the people further declared that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Why are governments instituted among men? To secure these rights. What rights? Our rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know, there's six directives, prime directives, I call them, six prime directives that we the people gave this government when we created the Constitution. And we did participate with it because we are their posterity. And they did it for themselves and ourselves. And whatever we do today, we not only do for ourselves, we do for our children also, because they can't do it yet. And they're incapable of doing it at this point in time. So we do it for them, for ourselves and for them. So it's for all of us. But anyway, we the people further declared that we hold these truths. Okay, I just read that. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Obedience to the Constitution is the extent of that consent, and no judge and no Congress can alter that which we the people ordained. To alter it is high treason. So whenever they write laws that has nothing to do with any authority or power or jurisdictions that we gave them, then that's treason. And we find that the laws they're writing are really to bring themselves to more power and to bring us, we the people, into subjection, you know, just like they did in the 14th Amendment, okay, where They give us civil rights. You know, they've given us, they didn't even call them rights. I'm trying to think of the word they used for that, but they didn't give us rights. In any event, because people are both ignorant and deceived as to what law is and its purpose, they are flabbergasted to hear that liberty is freedom from all positive law. And again, positive law is law created by man, by humans. Some will say we need law in order to live in society, and thereby they ignorantly accept punitive law. That's, by the way, USC Title 18. That's where we find penal law, punitive law. And people respond to that and accept that. They blindly accept it. So they ignorantly accept punitive law. When the fact of the matter is, people are social by nature, and man by nature acknowledges nature's laws and usually behaves in public. Therefore, people do not need legislation to control their behavior. We already know, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not injure another. Simply put, do no harm. That's the law of God. We all know it. It's written in the hearts of all men. God said so. I know it. I have a conscience. I know right from wrong. I know right from wrong since I was a very young child. I remember being very young, even 8, 9 years old, possibly, and knowing I'd done wrong or something. I know the difference between right and wrong. Everyone does. Let's see where we're at. Simply put, do no harm. Yes, I guess that's the key, do no harm. These are the laws of nature's God, and the purpose of common law, also known as courts of justice, when they injure another. Common law courts, also known as courts of justice, when they injure another. It is here where people are judged by their peers and not bureaucrats. People do not need bureaucrats involved in the controlling of their behavior. And that's the key. A court of justice is controlled by the people. If the people decide through the juries, untainted, uncontrolled, not bound down by any statute or anything. They look at the facts, they make a decision. Was there an injured party? How can we fix it? And if we can't fix it, then let's send it into the jury to decide, the Pettit jury. That's the process of common law. This is the people's business. It's not the judge's business. It's not the bureaucrat's business. It's not the legislator's business. It's nobody's business but we, the people. We judge ourselves. That's nature. That's nature's law. That's a common law court. When a judge sits in on a common law court, he's called the magistrate, whether he's a judge or magistrate or both. All judges are magistrates. All judges have the ability to sit on a common law court, but the sole purpose is to keep the traffic moving and sign off the papers, put on the seal, and put on paper the will of the people. That's it. His job doesn't go any further than that. And once he tries to tell people that they have to judge people by a certain statute or law, well, then he is guilty of jury tampering. Juries are free. We're free people. And we have to realize that. We have to step up and be mature enough to take control of that, that we are in control of our courts. Now, we do have the equity courts. Hang on 1 second. My dog wants to go out. I got to get her out. She'll be whining if I don't. Okay, we have what's called equity courts. Equity court is when a judge sits in and we accept his or her decision on a matter, usually contract, disagreements, okay? Never, ever a criminal act. If you've been injured maliciously, could be, it accidentally wouldn't be criminal. But if it's looked at as being potentially criminal, malicious, then the judge can't rule on that. Only the people can rule on that, period, end of subject. People need to understand that, because we don't. We allow these people to judge over us, to lord over us. So anyway, judges can rule on a case if we permit them. That's called courts of equity. There's courts of law and courts of equity. And that law plays two different roles. It could be law being statutes or law being justice courts. So, like I said, there is 57 different USC titles. There are 57 different jurisdictions. 27 of them are law. Okay, they're enacted law, positive law. All those words are used, enacted or positive. So it is law. And a judge can sit and rule on those cases. And rightly so, because you need an individual who understands the statutes of that particular jurisdiction and to apply them correctly. The problem is they all seem to be corrupt. They all seem to be pressing towards the status quo and throwing us out of courts under Rule 12 constantly and given no reason for it. But again, judges sit in. Now, it becomes a problem, though, and maybe not so much so, because under USC titles, for instance, 18 was written for a purpose. You know, you have military law also, okay, and tribunals sit on military, which means I don't know how they choose these people, and I don't know whether they're just officers that sit on these particular tribunals, which I would imagine probably are people with some experience and understanding of military law, okay? But they judge them as a jury, and that's the jury of their peers. If you're in the military, you're being judged by a jury of your peers, other military personnel. And it makes sense, as long as the people are honest and just about what they're doing. And that's the problem in the courts. We don't have judges that are honest and judge about what they're doing. But if they were, we should be able to go into courts and set a date, get in there quickly in a day in and out, settle the matter, and move on with life. You know, most contract or disagreements, even verbal contract disagreements, can be handled within a day. There's no need for, you know, bring it out for a year or something. But, of course, our Constitution also says, in courts of equity, anything over $20, if it's valued over $20, anyone has the option to call for a trial by jury. Now, a trial by jury under USC's titles, okay, again, there are 27 positive jurisdictions, lawful jurisdictions, and the application of laws, statutes are applied upon the disagreement with the argument. And under certain conditions, under USC 18, for instance, there is certain penalties for a clerk or for a judge if they commit a particular crime, conceal papers, destroy papers, mutilate papers, remove papers, act under the color of law. And these are all important for us, the laws for us to have to apply to the bureaucrat, not to us, to the bureaucrat. And so if they're being judged under USC 18 or some other title that has this ability to judge a crime underneath it, I would imagine it could continue in that court with a jury. In other words, but the judge would tell the jury what the law is, and the jury must decide according to that law. That is appropriate, and that's for them. It's not for us. You can't take people into those courts unless you have signed up to participate in something that they have, that we the people gave them authority and control over, some commercial activities maybe, okay, is where we might be involved. But there's a lot of activities. Again, remember, most of these, all of these to some degree are regulations, and it's like policies and procedures for a company. And if you don't obey the policies and procedures, you're going to be canned, and maybe they'll fine you or something. I don't know, whatever they got figured out. But again, you signed up for it. If you participate with the Department of Labor for unemployment, you signed up for it. You're in that administrative process. These are regulations, and you have to abide by them. And before you can take it into a court of justice, you have to first go through that administrative process because you signed up for it. And if you're not happy with that, you can appeal it administratively. And if you're still not happy with that, you can take it into the Supreme Court of the state and deal with it there. But the Supreme Court will not hear anything until you go through the administrative process, the municipality process. And so, okay, back to the paper here. Okay, let me just pick back up. I read this already. We already know, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not injure another. Simply put, do no harm. These are the laws of nature's God and the purpose of common law courts, also known as courts of justice, when they injure another. It is here where people are judged by their peers and not bureaucrats. People do not need a bureaucrat involved in the controlling of their behavior. If an individual wants to use cannabis, for instance, for medicinal purposes or even for recreational purposes, what business is that of the bureaucrat? Even if an individual wants to use heroin, which can destroy their life, this is their decision. We cannot save people from themselves. And as President Dwight D. Eisenhower said, we have never stopped sin by passing laws. And in the same way, we are not going to take a great moral ideal and achieve it merely by laws. And where do we stop? Do we arrest people who drink alcohol, smoke cigarettes, eat too much, consume too much sugar, have unprotected sex, have homosexual relationships, spank their children, refuse to take flu shots, refuse to inoculate their children, refuse medical aid, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. As Thomas Jefferson said, I prefer dangerous freedom over peaceful slavery. So liberty is a state of mind. If we don't really understand what it is, liberty is freedom from the legislative laws, from positive law. It's freedom from your government. It's telling your government, you have no business in my business. Don't stick your fingers in my business. You owe me nothing, and I owe you nothing, and you owe me nothing, other than your obedience is the only thing they owe us. Obedience to the Constitution, the law that we wrote. This is a foundational principle. If we do not understand this principle and build upon this principle as we look at law, we're going to miss everything, and we'll never really have liberty, true liberty. And if we think we can say, well, you can't let people stick needles in their arms, you know, that's not good, that's not nice. Well, maybe people want to stick needles in your child's arm, put that mercury into your child's arm, and maybe make it a law because you're a risk to the other children in school. After all, don't schools require children to be inoculated in order to go to them? I know when my children were young, they were requiring that. It was a big battle with my son. My daughter, we didn't even send to school. And then we pulled one of my sons out, and that was that. But, you know, who makes these laws up? Who makes these decisions? No, this is God's law. You can't save people from themselves. And we'd have a lot less problems, particularly in the drug issue, if we allowed it to just be done with. You know, control it. Don't allow it to be sold to children like you control, you know, cigarettes and alcohol. Control it, the sale. So that it doesn't get into the hands of children. And what will that rule do? They'll get rid of a huge amount of crime. All kinds of crimes that go on in gangs and stuff in the city. It's all built around drugs. You don't have the drug pusher in the schoolyards. You don't have the drugs coming over through the borders and people being killed. You don't have people planting things in certain areas out west and people, you know, happening upon them. And they get killed over it because they saw something they shouldn't. Believe me, that's happening right here in this country, out west, as we speak. All of that would disappear just by legalizing drugs. And children won't have the experience with them because they'll be taught in school properly, or they should be taught in school properly, that these things are dangerous, you shouldn't do it. Their peers aren't doing it because it isn't being pushed in the school. So they get to adulthood, never having to do it during childhood, and they've bypass the whole process. You know? I don't do drugs today because I didn't do them when I was a child. Yeah, I experimented with marijuana. I might use it for medicinal purposes. But other than that, I don't do drugs. I don't even drink liquor or anything. Maybe a glass of wine occasionally here or there. I mean, really rare. I haven't had a beer in years. So point is why? Because that wasn't important in my life when I was a child. I didn't have that problem. Most people with addictive problems, most people with drug problems and alcohol problems, it's because they had problems in their young life, you know, when they were younger, and that was available, and that's how they dealt with their problems. In most cases, I think that is the case. But in any event, who gets to make all these laws up? Nobody. You know, even God has statutes and he has laws. I think I was bringing this up a little earlier. God's laws, he commands us to exercise in courts of justice. Then there's statutes, you know. God, a statute is, you know, to keep the Sabbath day holy. It's not a law. You can't take a person to court. Men don't have the right to judge men who don't go to church or something or keep the Sabbath day holy. No, but that's a statute of God. That's between you and him, but that's not the law, per se, that we have to apply, that we've been given the authority to apply. Okay. Liberty, the most misunderstood concept, demands that we do not permit the state to legislate our behavior. Freedom from man's laws and restrictions is an unalienable right, which cannot be sold or transferred. Civil law and criminal law is the decree by the will of man as an embodiment of the state, and as a result makes us a subject of the state and not a subject or child of God. Eventually, it always becomes money-making exploits and always expands to greater abuse. It promotes the privatization and monetarization, monetarizing of prisons, which after all need to be filled, because the whole business becomes a business in the name of justice. And the nature of business is to make more business, when in fact it is RICO. And that is why America Inc. has more people in prison than any other nation. And that's a fact. You know, after I had written this, I just heard on the news, maybe the next day or so, maybe even that day somewhere, you know, in conversation about that fact that we have more people, the United States has more people in prison than any other nation. Go figure that out, okay? Why is that? Prison, look at, courts are not supposed to be about prison. Courts are supposed to be about justice, restitution, restoring the injured party. If you steal a man's ox, you got to give him back four or five. If you steal a man's sheep, you got to give him back three or four. There's biblical principles. We can make them up ourselves. They make sense. We use money, generally speaking. They get awarded a money issue to help for the pain and suffering, to make life better, or whatever, to restore the person back to their original state as best we can. That's the purpose of common law courts or natural courts. That's the purpose of common law. But our government has turned it around, and every penalty is jail. Every single penalty. Everything's an infamous crime. Everything requires jail time. And maybe even fines and stuff. They take your things. And they don't even give it to the people. Well, they keep it themselves. The government keeps it. So again, more RICO here. Then they charge you money to go in to get a court open, to get a court of justice, and they charge you for it. That's a crime, selling justice. It's called RICO. Anyway, okay, I'm looking at the time. It's 10:15, so we're not going to have time to get into USC 18. I will talk about that next week and maybe a few other things. But anyway, let's see where we go from here. Any announcements, Jen, or any questions or anything?
Well, I was going to remind people about the plaintiffs' meeting on Wednesday, but you've already done that. I do have a question that has four parts, or three and a half, maybe, if you're ready.
Okay.
This fellow is about to be incarcerated, and he wants to know, do I have the right to maintain control of my court papers when I'm being incarcerated, so I can prepare what I intend to file prior to turning myself in for a bench warrant? If this is true, how best do I enforce the right to bring my documents with me into jail?
Well, that's a major problem. You do have an unalienable right of access to law, courts, and so on. You have also an unalienable right if it's criminal, hold upon you, whereas you have an unalienable right of counsel. Okay, counsel doesn't mean you necessarily have necessary need someone to actually speak for you in court, or they can share speaking with you in court if you can't articulate your case well. Don't understand. And this is the problem. Look, we the people need to become educated in this. And again, this course we're putting together, I believe, will solve these issues, and people will understand and have the necessary tools, which is knowledge, education, the necessary tools in order to represent themselves, to go in and deal with their own issues. But one of the problems, one of the things we have to do is get rid of the abuse. And that's what this court case is all about that we'll be filing up here in Albany. Hopefully soon. Again, I can't say when exactly because we're still writing it, and there's a lot going into this, a lot of thought. But in any event, once we take control of the courts and give it back to the people, we won't have these problems. And we won't have to worry about going to jail because, going to court isn't about going to jail. It's about getting justice. And justice is not putting someone in a box. That's not what justice is. Justice is, again, for every injury, there must be a remedy. Getting a remedy for the person who was injured. That's what justice is about. Now, there's a lot of laws and crimes, quote-unquote, that, statutes tell us are crimes and we got to be punished for. And there's no injured party, like smoking pot. I mean, my goodness. Or use some other kind of drug. I mean, my goodness, who are these people? People who take drugs have a problem, don't they? They need to deal with their problem. And if the problem is obnoxious in such a way that it affects society, the grand jury can get involved here. If someone is brought up before, let's take someone that's driving drunk, okay? And a cop sees them driving drunk. Certainly they can't allow them to do that. How's the best way to deal with that? Take that person, remove their keys, have their car towed, let them pay for the towing bill, have the car towed, okay? Drive them home and tell them I'm dropping the keys off down to the grand jury. I don't know if they're in this week or next week, but when they're in, you find out and you can get your keys back from them. Now you can come in the grand jury. Go read the Magna Carta. It talks about fixing the problems, getting in between the government and the people, fixing the problems. And they say that they will restore the individual back to their original being. So that's where it first starts with the grand jury. The grand jury can look at this situation and say, hey, look, you got a problem here, and this is what we're going to write a prescription for you to do. It's not going to jail. It's getting help. And whatever that might be, some program or whatever, I don't know. But people have to figure that out. And if they're going to be abusive and they come back a second time and they're putting people in harm's way, well, that I think is an injury to people. Our children could be killed because they're driving drunk or something like that. A lot of children are killed. People are killed because of drunk drivers. Well, then if they can't fix the problem, send it into the trial jury and let them deal with it. But you see, once the grand jury deals with it and makes a written agreement, now it becomes as if they went to court. It's done. It's sealed. It's on paper. But you see, that's where the people have to understand that they need to get involved. Go read the Magna Carta. See what they said about fixing the problems. Go read the history. Go read the Brent Winter's book, The Excellence of the Common Law. I mean, it explains a lot of this stuff, the way it was, the way it should be. Certainly government should not be in control of this. Take family court. My goodness, how can you send situations and problems to a bunch of lawyers? Where everyone's got their own lawyer. Read what Jefferson has to say about all these lawyers. They get nothing done, ever. They accomplish nothing. They solve nothing. And so, we need to understand this and take control. If we're not going to be mature enough to step up, to learn, to take care of these things so we can prepare you know, a better life for our children and ourselves and our neighbors, then we don't deserve nature's law, natural law. We don't deserve it. Go back to Babylonian law, because that's what you got. It's called Roman law, hidden in Justinian law. Finds its roots right back to Babylon. That's where it all comes from. It's statutes, the state controlling the people. You are their subjects. If law is applied to you, you are subject to their law. You are subject to the state. I'm subject to no one but God. And that's the way. Now, they don't like that. They think that's crazy, and they can do everything to stop that. And that's the battle we're fighting. And if it's, and people aren't willing to fight it. You know, I get these things from people. They come and maybe spend some time with us, and they see that we're not really having many successes, but it's all a stepping stone. It's building cases. And if they're paying attention, they'll understand that. Okay, it's also building, you know, critical mass, education, stepping stone cases, evidence. It's what it's all about. That's what we've been doing the past X amount of years. I forget how many years it's been. I think back in about 4 years, I guess, 5 years. And so that's what it is we're doing. But I recently had someone want to know if we had any success. It's been a while since I've been there. You didn't have any success. I was reading this, that, the other thing, and see, you didn't have any success yet. And wondering if you had success. I don't have time to respond to an email to begin with. They should come to a Monday night program and ask these things, and I'd give them the answer I'm giving them now, you know. It doesn't matter how many battles we lose, and we're going to lose a lot of them because we're a scrawny army. The point is we have to win the war. And I do believe we will win the war because the king is in charge, and it's him who we're fighting for. To bring the king back into our courts of justice. That's God, nature's God, to rule in our courts through the minds and the hearts of the people, where the last question to be asked is, should mercy be considered? Okay? And in every case, if the mercy should be considered, how much? You know, if you steal a loaf of bread and you go to the letter of the law, you're going to jail. Okay? Where a jury in control, understanding the situation, and finds out you took a loaf of bread to feed your children or whatever. If I was in, I would have done the same thing. Mercy. You see, law is cold. Okay? Statutes are cold. God's law is not. His law is the law of the heart. That's why he wrote it in the heart. His law is written in the hearts of men. That's what the Bible tells us. He put it there. He purposely put it into the heart. So we do this lovingly, you know. What is the two great laws? Love God and love your neighbor. That's it. And upon that is all laws. Because if you're busy loving God and loving your neighbor, you're not hurting nobody. There is no injury. There is no crime. Never will be. You'll be doing good. Anyway, is there a second part to that?
Oh, yes. There's
Did
two
I get
more.
Lost?
There's two more. Well, you covered a lot of other things. Next part. One such document would be a writ of habeas corpus, demanding to deliver
Let me just go back to the paperwork here thing here. Okay. They're not going to let you have paper in there. They're not going to let you have a computer. They'll give you access to certain things, but you're not going to get into the real stuff. You'll only be given access to the cold, hard law of statutes, legislation. You're not going to get the real stuff in there. And that is a problem. That is a crime. You know, I would say, look at this book that I'm writing. All right? You can have a book in prison. This book will have everything you need to fight a case in court. There's going to be all kinds of stuff in there and conclusions and law and an understanding of concepts of law that you'll be able to go in and battle. Okay. First order of business is what's the jurisdiction here? Challenge the jurisdiction. They don't have jurisdiction over you. And we're going to talk about that next week on USC 18. Okay. USC 18, they don't have jurisdiction. That's where the penal law is. If you challenge the jurisdiction, they got to prove it. Okay. That's where your battle is. And you don't let them go. You know, some people who go to court and they're kind of getting success, but the judge won't let them go. It's because they're stuck on that issue. And the person pushing that issue may not even be realizing the issue that they're really pushing that is frustrating this judge. Why is it frustrating him? Because he needs to keep you back into the system. He needs to keep you subject to him and his court. And he's got to be careful on how he does it, because certain things said in the court releases you. And if he goes beyond that, even though he can get away with it, it's going to be on record, and he could be held accountable for it at a later time. He puts himself at risk. That's why judges look for a place to hang the hat. And these are the issues that I realized that I won. When I won in federal court, I threw an army of things at them, you know, a whole bunch of stuff, two or three major items at them. I'm not sure which one worked, but I think collectively they probably all worked. But ultimately, the jurisdiction, I think, was the real key to the case that I won. You don't have the ability to give me, I didn't use the word justice, but I forget the word. But they can't satisfy the problem. They can't cure the problem. They can't restore me. They can't fix it. You can't give it to me. There's nothing here that this court can do for me, okay? And if it can't do nothing for me, then there could be no judgment, because either I win or they win, you see? And that's especially in a criminal situation. Remember, statutes are not law. This principle of liberty, if you understand this principle of liberty that we're talking about, liberty is freedom from law. From positive law, from legislative law. That's what liberty is. Not freedom from natural law. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not harm. You're not free from that law. We're all held to that one. Even the bureaucrats are held to that one. Okay? But we are free from any law, man-made law, period. We owe them nothing. Absolutely nothing. The state has nothing to say over our behavior, okay? And the state doesn't have the authority or right to charge us, per se. That the jury has to do. You have to get an indictment, okay? And the state doesn't have the right to judge us. That the trial jury has to do. It's always back to the people. We will restore. We will fix. We will take care of the business. We will get between you and the government. We will protect you. We will restore you. Read the Magna Carta. That's what it's about. Restoring and protecting the people. Okay, let's get back to that other thing. So he's not going to be able to get to bring things in. You should prepare everything you got if you're out to get it before you go in and have it. And stand on, your big argument is two arguments, jurisdiction and personam jurisdiction is the key. They may have subject matter, but they may not even have subject matter jurisdiction. So look to see what the subject powers are, what the jurisdiction is, subject jurisdiction, and look for personam jurisdiction. And so you can deny them on both of those cases, especially personam, person, jurisdiction over the person, and also a violation of your right of due process. They cannot give you due process. How can you give me due process if you can't give me justice? You can't give me due process. Due process requires justice. You can't have one without the other. They work together. And so they can't give that to you. And that's your argument. That's your battle. That's your fight. And if you can really understand this and put it together and understand, and one of the other things I'm trying to do in this book is put the idea of an understanding of the other laws. We don't need to study those laws. My goodness, some of these codes have 1,000 pages in it. U.S. 26 has 46 or 48,000 pages, some huge number of pages. Maybe I think they reduced it, as a matter of fact. I think it's down. But in any event, they got a lot of pages. I think it's 6,000 pages, USC 26. And you don't have to study all that. You don't have to know all that. I mean, if you want to specialize in that area and practice law in that area for whatever reason, then you go study the law and practice that law and defend people underneath that jurisdiction, in that body of law. But what you have to do is understand generally what they are. Are they positive law? Has it been enacted? What's the jurisdiction? What's the subject matter jurisdiction? Okay, so do they have subject matter jurisdiction over you? Do they have personam jurisdiction? Can they give you due process? And all these things, have they been enacted? Or is this, you know, again, out of the 57 USC titles, only half of them, 27 of them, are positive law. They have been enacted. If it hasn't been enacted, it's nothing to do with us. It's regulations for the bureaucrats. But even if it has been enacted, it's still regulation and law for the bureaucrat or for the commercial business being done. What's going on at sea? There's maritime law. There's military law. You know, there's all these different laws, and they're good laws, and they're required. That's why we gave them the business of taking care of that business. But when they apply that to the people, and that's what they've done, that's where we get injured and we have a problem. If you understand that, you understand liberty, and you make your argument and position on jurisdictions and due process, I think you can frustrate the hell out of a judge and get out of it. So, anyway.
Okay. Ready for part two?
Okay.
One document would be a writ of habeas corpus demanding to deliver me to a de jure common law court of record. If this is possible, where can I verify the details on how I would specify the correct court and guarantee my delivery to it?
Well, the problem is there are no courts of justice. We found that out. They've concealed them. They're still there. They've been hidden, okay? They've been concealed. And that is going to be the endeavor of this court case. This is really what we're trying to really give a lot of good thought to make it so clear that they can't escape it, the fact that they have concealed a court, the court of justice. They have subverted the Constitution. They've subverted the people. They subverted the United States of America by concealing. They concealed. As a matter of fact, their statutes require 20 years in jail for that. The judge needs to go to 20 years in jail for that, for concealing. Okay? As a matter of fact, it even brought up concealing not only papers and documents, but also concealing the process. So that's what our court case is about. To get the minds of the people to understand this. And believe me, if you want an education, read this court case and read it over and over and over again. Get into the footnotes. Understand what's really being said, the messages we're sending to the judge, the way that we're structuring, you know, who we are, what we're doing, and what we expect to get done, and how they are criminals. Whoever is standing against us is a criminal and deserves to be indicted, okay? And that's why we did a pre-indictment for anyone who stands in the way of this particular court case. And we're going to let them know right up front that an indictment has already been decided by anybody who continues to conceal or prevent. That's another one, prevent, you know, justice from going forward, all right? And also, this is a conspiracy. It's treason. Anybody who teaches treason is guilty of treason. What does the bar do? The bar teaches treason. It replaces the law of the land with bad statutes, bad legislation. Some of the legislation is good, but when it comes up against the people, they've created all this legislation to box us into statutory courts and put us in jail and you know, injure us, destroy us, destroy our family, and to do whatever they please, all in the name of what they claim is law. But it's evil. It's a lie. But, you know, if people don't understand these concepts, then they're never going to win in court. And I'm beginning to see more and more on these concepts as I look and dig and put these things together. It's because I've never seen things brought together the way we're bringing it together. I've never seen anyone do it this way. So it's kind of unique, and maybe they have. We're just not aware of it, but they certainly haven't succeeded for all of us. We're not here just to succeed for this case, but for all the people. We want our courts of justice back. We want you to stop sticking your fingers into the business of the people. We want you to behave and obey the law, because right now you're lawless. And that's the battle. All right.
Okay. Last question. Once I'm delivered to a common law court with my prepared papers in hand, would I be able to place my written claim for damages into evidence on the record of what would be my case in common law established by writ of habeas corpus?
Yeah, well, if you could get into one of those courts, because they don't exist at the moment. Again, it's not that they're not there. The buildings are there. The personnel are there. The magistrates are there. The money's there. The process is there. Everything is there, but it's been concealed. You go look at a court's papers and see it's been concealed. You either go in a criminal court or civil court. Right there, you're not in a court of law. You're in a court, something other than law. A court that doesn't have the power to fine or incarcerate you, yet they do, okay? Reality is the way one perceives it. If you perceive that that cop over there can arrest you, then you've empowered him. If you don't believe it, it's the beginning of rejecting and denying. And it's then that, but we the people have to do this collectively. We have to get educated. If only a handful of us get educated, it's not enough. We need, a good percentage of people being educated. I don't know, a couple of percent maybe, 1%, 2% of the nation. If we can get that educated and they step up, we can take control. Okay, but again, that's what our court case is about. A habeas corpus, there's a process to go through it. The court has the authority to deny a habeas corpus. Only if it's not prima facie. Only if it's not prima facie. If it's prima facie, it means everything's in order on its face. He has to bring it through. Well, she has to bring it through. They must. That's American jurisprudence. They have to do it. You're saying, I've been denied my due process. That's what a habeas corpus is. You bring the body and bring the accuser and show us the facts. But right now, I want to see the facts on why I'm in jail or why I'm being held or why I got to keep coming back to this court. I want to see the facts. Where are they? Okay. And if they can't do that, that judge must dismiss you. But, again, like Rule 12, they just cast those things out because they think they have the power to deny. They figure you don't realize that it's only denial of something that's not prima facie. And they deny it. You don't know any better. They've been so used to doing it, they keep doing it, and nobody knows. Nobody does nothing. How come people don't know? You tell me, how come people don't know that USC 18 is the law of the sea? That's maritime law. How come that's where the penal code is? How come people don't know that? How come lawyers don't know that? How come that's never brought up? Who are these people to come and think that they can arrest you, federal courts, for drugs, marijuana, having a weapon or anything? Who are these people? You know, the federal court has no power or authority to really arrest the common person on any charges. There are no federal crimes. USC 18 is the law of the sea, not the land. There are no federal crimes. It's not their job to deal with the courts of justice. That's the state's job, to deal with the courts of justice. Every county has a state court in it, unless it's only a couple of people in the county. There are counties with very few people that go to another county, but that's far and in between. Nevertheless, you know, every county, that your courts are the state courts, the county where they're located in the county, you know. And here we call them the Supreme Court here in New York, the New York State Supreme Court, Dutchess County, New York State Supreme Court, Orange County, and so on. Each county has a Supreme Court, okay? And so you go into your county, which is the jurisdiction of that court, and to look for justice or whatever, or to be, they're going to pull some criminal accusation against you, accuse you of something, and it's got to be from a state court. Federal juries, grand juries, would be only pulled together for criminal activity of bureaucrats, not the people. They have no power, no authority. We don't belong in those courts for any of those purposes. Now, we can go into those courts for demanding when our unalienable right has been violated. They have the jurisdiction over that. The Constitution says so, Article 3. It tells us that that's their jurisdiction. Anything under this Constitution, any violation, if you've been violated in any way, okay, so it identifies with the laws under USC codes or the powers we gave them under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, which we created out of that, 57 USC codes, 27 of them which is law, the other 27 of them which is just regulations, but even the laws, regulations are all regulations, but other of them have been enacted. They're called, positive law is what it's called. It's a court of law because it's law. We gave them the authority. We vested them with the power to write that law. And so, but you and I don't break those laws. Now, of course, your commercial business, getting involved with different things and doing some crimes in banks. Hey, looking, doing these mortgage things, that's a federal crime, really, if you think about it. Those mortgage problems are a federal crime. These people should be in jail, take the federal court. And they're bureaucrats doing it, too. So there's a little bit of an authority over that. Right, did I answer the question? Or?
Yes, okay. I do believe. And that was the last question, so we're done with questions.
Okay, I see Gerard is here. You ready to take the board, Gerard? And do we see Brent? Is Brent here? I don't see him right now.
No, I haven't seen him either.
And maybe he came in as a regular and didn't give his skull down. Brent, I don't see Brent. Okay. So, Gerard, you want to take the board and pass over things over to you?
Yep. Is this working? Can you hear me?
Yep. We can hear you.
Okay.
All right, if Brent comes in, you can acknowledge him and give him some time. Meanwhile, you got the board.
Okay. Well, we only have Jim in there. I'm going to open Jim up.
Star 6 to get into the queue. Jim. Questions or comments?
There you are. Go ahead, Jim. You're open, buddy.
Hey, how's it going there?
That's a big question.
So I'm a little depressed, but then I'm trepidatious there. I guess that's the word. I'm wondering where we're going with this SAFE Act. I just can't wait for this meeting on Wednesday.
Yeah, if we have phone numbers, we should call people. Maybe you get a couple other people to call people and get them to this call because we need people to get together so we can throw our dollars together and be able to go back and appeal this. And we don't have much time. And if we don't get the money for the appeal, I think we could do, write a paper and send it to the judge for reconsideration. And, if we can really lay down, and tie him up so bad, that he has to consider it, and I think we might be able to, we'll try that too, but we can't, I don't know how that works there, whether we can kind of push that, get more time by doing that. And have more time added to the 21 days, which is what I think it is, 21 days to appeal, which is ridiculous. We should be able to just notify everyone with a single piece of paper and then given, a few months to prepare and get the money up and do what we got to do. Even New York State doesn't even charge you for an appellate court, if I recall. We didn't pay to go to a court, an appellate court, right, Gerard?
I don't remember.
Recall paying. Yeah, I don't recall paying.
It was such a while ago, I don't remember. We've been in and out so many places. I didn't think we had to pay because it was an appeal. We were brought there through another action, so.
Well, it's the same thing. What they did over, look, it's always the same thing for anybody going in pro se, in your own person. Always the same thing. Rule 12, failure to state a claim. Well, what the heck are you talking about? I mean, there's Rule 8, which identifies the exact requirements in order to get into a case. You get papers from lawyers where you go, they're pulling into court, and they just ask questions. They don't even produce any of the evidence yet. Maybe if there's a contract, they'll stick that in or something, or something that fakes an affidavit, because that's what you need, something. You need an affidavit, you need a contract, you need at least an affidavit, bare minimum. And then they don't prove nothing prior to going out to doing anything. They just ask questions and expect the answer. And yet we follow the Rule 8 to make sure we get all of the necessary points into the case. All right. We also follow the rule of the United States Supreme Court that made a ruling on what makes a case a problem. Okay. What exactly is the definition of failing to state a court of action? And what that is really is something to look at and be so obvious, it just has, it doesn't make sense. Maybe the paperwork is just gibberish. Maybe it's written like USC 26, you know, just gibberish. So we can't make heads or tail out of it. So I understand that. That was the purpose of Rule 12. But, you know, the Supreme Court said that even with that, it's not going to hurt to let the case go through anyway because it'll be thrown out on its merit. Eventually, it'll be ruled on properly at the end anyway. So it'll get its just deed, you know, justice decision or whatever you want to call that. But, again, they're doing it to keep us out. Anytime you go up against the government, you're thrown out for Rule 12. Didn't they throw Bob out for that?
I don't recall that. But what was the language they used? Did you post their answer?
Yeah, it's up on up online. Jan put it up there. I have not scrutinized it. You know, I've read through it. I thought it was really stupid. I mean, he regurgitated even the lie and didn't even correct the fact that we said that's a lie. It's a lie. You can't bring that up. Why bringing a lie up in here? You know, the fact that they lied. The fact that they assaulted, the fact that they, you know, yelled fire in a movie theater, so to speak. They called us cop killers. That was dangerous. You know, how is it every time I file a paper in the federal court, I get a visit from the FBI? Why is that? Think the judge has anything to do with that?
This was the federal court?
Yeah.
Yeah, the one in Albany for the SAFE Act.
SAFE Act, yeah. Again, anybody wants to get into the queue, there's nobody in the queue right now. Star 6 to get into the queue. I think it'll tell you to hit 1 or something after star 6 and then follow the instruction, be into the queue, have a question or a comment. Otherwise, Gerard will have to figure out something to talk about.
They must feel pretty confident where they're sitting. It's just the same old thing, and they think nobody can challenge them. I got to read to see what they said, but, you know, they're hanging their hat on something that they think is safe for them.
Well, first of all, you know what? The rules don't apply to us, and you know why? I was back and forth on this, okay? And we can use the rules, but they can't have any damaging effect on us. Why? Because the rules are under USC 28. It has nothing to do with we the people. Has nothing to do with courts of record. Nothing to do with us.
Can we call them excuses now? Excuse number 12, excuse number 8?
Well, it's always number 12. They never bring up 8. I bring up 8 because 8 gives us sort of a criteria, you know, a structure.
Yeah, but just like when they say infringement means frivolous use.
Right.
Then look at it, and it says rules. Dictionary. Rules
here's
just
the other
means
thing. He said this case was heard and decided.
Yeah, which wasn't.
That it was the same people. Okay? Well, look, it's not the same case because it's not the same people. Even if some of the people are the same, if one of the people is different, it's not the same. Okay? It's not identical. Something similar is not the same thing. If it's similar, it's similar. It's not exactly the same thing. That's number one. Number two, yeah, and the United States Supreme Court ruled on this, and we brought this up in our paperwork, that, hearing a case and deciding on a case is, you know, a case decided must first be heard, okay? This case was never heard. Again, we were thrown out under the same thing, failing to state a court of action, okay? We were thrown out on the state level when we went up to the Supreme Court. Now, that means we were not heard. So he lied again. He called us sovereign citizens. He lied. He said that we have no respect for the law. We don't believe that the law has anything to do, that it's all, that we can't be held accountable to the law and that the law has no value. I forget how he worded it all. He lied. We straightened all that out, even in our response paper. And yet the judge regurgitated that in order to get to the point. And then when he gets to the point and he throws us out, if I, and again, I haven't really sat and went through it very carefully. You know, I had the line by line. What I need to do, but I haven't done that yet. But if I recall, he gets to the end and then he makes his decision, but he doesn't give us the logic on what are these things. Are you saying that all of these things were the things, reasons we were thrown out for? It was this lie, that lie, or the other lie? Which lie was it? Was it all three lies? Okay? You see, it was all nothing but a lie.
He kind of hung his hat on the judge that wanted to dismiss it when they wrote their letter motion in there to dismiss. So that's basically what he did. What he did was, is that on Rule 12, he's entertaining their motion to dismiss, even though you wrote a writ of error and you told them.
We corrected the lies. Every lie. Look at these guys right. Had nothing. And they said lie after lie.
Right. And they're not allowed to dismiss it. So it almost seems like the judge that signed this decree here is in conspiracy with the judge earlier, which you gave a writ of error, which we gave a writ of error from our court to tell them that they're in error and they can't rule like that.
So right, then, but that was a different case. That was a different case, Jim. Jim, that case was the case we got going for, that we opened up for a place as a depository for filing papers and stuff. And we did the indictment on that judge, and we slapped him on that case, and so on. In this case here, we did make the point, if I recall, we also did an argument of the fact that we're coming in on a court of record. And we used the word common law, which I think gave them liberty to say, aha, common law. Okay, it's going to be our common law. We'll think about our common law, which is a collective decision-making of federal district courts. That's the common law, okay? You see, and so they're giving us that common law, so they say. And a court of record, a court of record requires a tribunal where the judge has no say. You know, I don't know how they're getting around that one, okay? But of course, maybe they say, well, if we're able to get past the muster, then they would have given us the jury. Of course, it would be statutorized. You know, make sure that they're controlled by statutes. So we'd lose there again anyway. The whole system is corrupt. This case proves it.
You can't lose.
We did have a writ of error in here, and they put in a ruling denying plaintiff's letter seeking writ of error and show cause on April 23rd, 2018.
Yeah, right. I don't remember what that. I have to go back.
He filed
and
a writ of error and show cause in which he appears to take issue with the fact that the court granted, although far from clear, plaintiff appears to argue that the court was without authority to permit defendants to move and dismiss the complaint prior to the filing of federal rules of civil procedure, clearly provide for this procedure. Wait a minute. Prior to the filing an answer in support of this position, plaintiff Bedork has cited to case law, secondary sources, and constitutional.
Yeah, I remember writing that now.
That provide no support for his position. Rule 12 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure clearly provide for this procedure, and the validity of Rule 12 is beyond dispute, according to the plaintiff's
letter. Well, I'm glad I did write that paper. I'm glad he did bring that up, because you know what? That's another point we can now make. Rule 12 is under USC 28. USC 28 doesn't have any jurisdiction underneath us at all. I'm not even sure if it's positive law.
Well, you know, we're coming in under a civil case, and that's what they're hanging their hat on, because they.
Well, yes, and we were clear that we're not civil, and we're coming in not under statutory but under common law. But that's where I think the mistake is. Instead of saying common law, we need to say a natural law.
It wouldn't even matter.
Wouldn't matter
if it's an Article 3, they're not making any decision regarding the outcome. They got to put
it to
a jury.
All Article III courts, you look at there are 28 known potential jurisdictions and bodies of law. 28. They've got 27 USC titles. Each one of them is a body of law. 27 of them are called law. The other 27 is referred to as really regulations, okay, and not necessarily law. Let me see. I got a note on that. Let me see if I can find this. Yeah. Oh, no, that's not it.
I think what we're finding
historical.
Is...
Yeah, historical revision notes. Now this is about particularly rule USC 18, but it does apply to the other statutes. Now this section, but this is particular in USC 18. They have these things in all of them. Historical and revision notes. This section first appeared in 1909 Criminal Code. It made it possible to combine in one chapter all the penal provisions covering acts within the admiralty and maritime jurisdictions without the necessity of repeating in each section the places covered. You see, it's a hidden place where that's put in, and you'll find it kind of hidden. And 26 is even trickier than that. So they hide it. And then they gave themselves a leave to only mention it once and not say it again. It should be brought up constantly over and over and over again throughout the body of law concerning what kind of law this is. And after all, remember the United States Supreme Court said that they have to have the jurisdiction on the paperwork. Where's the jurisdiction? But it goes on. Let's see. In several revised sections of Chapter 11, the words "within the special maritime and territorial jurisdiction of the United States" have been added. Thus, the jurisdictional limitations will be preserved in all sections of said Chapter 11 describing an offense. So if you read through this stuff, really it's a denial, okay? Individual have agreed. I know there's some more good stuff in here.
Well, that's the answer, John. You quote that. You say, look,
yes, absolutely.
Right here it says under admiralty, and we the people are not under admiralty, and we're coming in as the sovereign people. Of course, they love that word, but that's what we are.
Well, here's a United States Supreme Court ruling. Listen to this. All courts operating under U.S. codes are inferior courts whose jurisdictions are limited and special. They're in a limited and a special court, and whose proceedings are not according to the course of the common law. Criminal courts are courts under USC 18, whose jurisdiction and procedure is defined by statute. Likewise, civil courts and admiralty courts proceed according to statutory law. Any court proceeding according to the statutory law is not a court of record, which only proceeds according to the common law. It is an inferior court. Now, I was reading on the USC 26, and it says the only one in all of the statutes that claims to be a court of record. But if they're court of record right here, the Supreme Court has already ruled that any court proceeding according to statutory law is not a court of record. USC 26 is statutes. They proceed according to statutes. People get convicted on statutes. But all the evidence is here. It's so clear.
I'm astounded at how they can rule and use all of those court findings and then forget all about Miranda versus Arizona that says there shall be no thing which would abrogate the constitutional rights of the or something to that effect.
And also Marbury versus Madison. It's null and void because it's repugnant. Why is it repugnant? Because we have liberty, and liberty is freedom from the law. That's if you wanted to sum up the word liberty, it's freedom from law. End of subject. Save natural law, of course. We're all under natural law. But it's freedom from legislative law. It's freedom from positive law. It's freedom from statutes. It's freedom from codes and regulations. It's freedom from the government. It's leave me alone. Don't talk to me. Don't say nothing. Get out of my life. Get out of my living room, my bedroom. Just leave me alone. Go away.
Well, what we should do is we should file a criminal case on him now. We should put them in and say, look, you violated our rights. We're going to indict you. And we're going to demand an arrest through a local sheriff.
We've already indicted him.
Well, then we got to push somebody to go over there and hand them an arrest.
Oh, wait a second. Hold it. No, this court case we haven't indicted, but we can indict. We did a pre-indictment. I think you've been busy with your problems, but we did a pre-indictment last week, I think it was. Matter of fact, it was last Monday. A pre-indictment to indict anyone who tries to interfere prevent, mutilate, cover up, hide, or whatever the court case we're going to file. And we're going to make that clear in the paperwork. Now, this guy here, we need to write a paper to him, whether we appeal it or not. We need to write a paper to this guy. We need to make it clear of the crimes that he's committed and give him opportunity to repent and turn from his ways and correct the problem. And if he doesn't do it, then we're going to bring him before the grand jury, and we're going to ask for an indictment for subversion.
And I would mention that admiralty law and say, look, if you think that you're sitting in this admiralty law, you should know it doesn't apply to we the people, that you have hidden our court.
Well, that's 18. He's operating out of 28.
Mm-hmm.
So now 28. And remember, 28, even this particular clause, it says that 28 is okay as long as it doesn't violate the people's rights. So right there is a pry bar in the door on that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it goes to show the old adage of when they call it a criminal court, it's because it's run by criminals.
Yeah, it's a criminal court. Yeah.
You know, we want to be in common law so we can have it run by the common law. They're going to put it in court or civil court. I guess civil means uncivil to them.
Something. Anyhow, I mean, well, civil means civil. Civil court means statutory court. Civil court means civil rights in a civil court, which is civil rights in statutory court. Everything is subject to the government. We're subject to the government. So the government has subjected us or made us subjects of their law. The government has made us subject of their system, their court, the whole thing.
Right, all in violation of the law.
Well, we're in the wrong court, obviously, and they're not giving us the right court.
No, we're in the right building.
Right.
We're with the right people. I changed the paperwork on this case, so we got the paperwork correct. I put court of record in there.
But they haven't acknowledged that. They don't acknowledge that.
Well, I know. I think I pointed it out, and if I didn't point it out, I'm going to point it out clearer, but I'm sure I pointed it out. They probably now they're going to be looking in the paperwork next time. Because what they've done is they concealed the court of justice by not putting a box. They've erased the box where it says the court of justice or natural law or common law or court of record. They erased that box. It's not there.
That's the fight I would give them, that you didn't give us the court that we claim we were in. You ignored it and you moved ahead into some Fugazi admiralty or wherever you think you went.
Right. On your opportunity to defend it. And then tell them if they're not going to at least acknowledge our court, then we'll have to hold them in contempt of court, which means an indictment.
And an arrest. And I would say arrest. And I wouldn't say where it's coming from, whether it's going to be a citizen's arrest or a sheriff going to go get them or whatever it is. But they're going to be subject to arrest by we the people for this case.
Yep. It may not be today. It may be 10 years from now. But sooner or later,
we're gonna put a warrant out.
I understand.
Warrant out for their arrest.
I understand that. I get it. But I mean, we compile all this, for future use. You know, they better make sure that all the people are still fat, dumb, and happy and watching TV, you know?
We got a couple of educated sheriffs that if we showed them the law and how they violated it, that they would go arrest them and put them on and bring them into a court.
Well, yeah, but that's still an issue.
What do you mean? We could do it right now. If we get a sheriff to go over there with a bunch of people and hand the guy an arrest and actually bring him in and arrest him and then put him in front of a judge to indict and for an indictment for a what do you call it, when you're brought in front of the judge for a preliminary hearing.
Here's another point, okay? I'm looking at USC 28 right now. Okay, USC 28 has been enacted into law. It is law. But it's, of course, law. What USC is, let me see if I can read this. Hang on a second. US 28 says judiciary and judicial procedure. That's what it is. That's what USC 28 is, judiciary and judicial procedure. And it's got an appendix. And it all, of course, because it deals with the rules for the civil procedure, okay, that's what it is. But it's rules for civil procedure. We're not in a civil procedure. You see, civil procedure means statutory. That's what civil means, okay? So the rules of a statutory procedure, which is the statutes and of USC titles.
That's,
okay?
Therein is the problem.
Of course.
That's where they feel confident.
That's right. We got to make it clear on the paper.
And you know, the fact that people get gun permits through their system makes them subservient to them, and they're feeling confident about that too, because technically we shouldn't even get a permit. They have no right,
right,
to license a right.
Exactly.
Yeah, I saw that on Facebook today, that concealed carry permit. And I said, I don't know why anybody would do this. Why would you get a license to carry a gun? You don't get a license to speak, do you? You don't get a license to carry a pen, do you?
Well,
that's the first.
Give them time, Jim, give them time.
We've had gun control since the 1600s, he said. That's how he started his argument.
I'm just trying to reason to the crowd out there that's thinking that their whole savior is relying in the fact that they can get a concealed carry permit to walk around. They got it. It was approved in 1791.
Look at here. They got Title I, applicability of rules, what it could be applied to. Okay, and they give you all of these list of things. I got to go through this entire list. Let me see how long this is, but I'll give you an example of some of them. Okay. So it's applicable, these rules are applicable on these issues. The scope of rules and definitions of titles, suspension of rules, Title II, appeal from a judgment or order of a district court. Okay, so you don't appeal from a judgment or an order from a common law court, but they don't have criminal courts really going, and they shouldn't have, so it has nothing to do with anything we're doing anyway. Appeal as a right. 3.1 is abrogated. We need to find out what that was. Appeal as a right when taken, appeal by permission, appeal in a bankruptcy case, bond for cost or an appeal in a civil case, stay or injunction pending appeal, release in a criminal case, the record on appeal, forwarding the record. You know, if we go through this whole list, I'll bet you dollars to donuts, we're not going to find anything that puts us into this category under the laws of nature. Again, it's the civil rules, civil procedure.
Well, anyway, we got many more people in the queue now, so interesting. So we'll have to talk about, you know, how, the response to this, but obviously they need a good swift kick in the pants.
Yeah, I'd like to
people.
Respond two ways on this. I'd like to respond directly to the judge, okay, and also I'd like to respond, as an appeal. And again, if we don't do that, I got to find out if we do a motion for reconsideration, does that set aside the clock for appeal? And I don't see why it wouldn't. And most of the reconsideration is to make all these points that we've spoken about tonight, make all these points, and I could think of some more, too, and put him in such a tight box that he can't do anything and see what he's going to do. So make him a criminal. You know, expose him as the criminal that he is, really. He's made himself a criminal.
Okay. You got your homework now.
I already got a lot too much already, you know.
Yeah. All right, we done. I'll bring in the next person.
Hang on a second. So are we gonna get together like a quarter of before 7 there?
If you want.
Yeah, that would be, well, it'd be nice. We're all on the same page here.
What are you talking about? I missed that. Quarter of 7, why? Well,
on Wednesday.
Oh, I guess I wasn't here when you talked about that.
Yeah, Wednesday at 7 is this call with all the SAFE Act plaintiffs.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying we should get like a quarter of so we can just make sure we're all there, nobody's late, all the rest of that.
Yeah, okay. Wednesday.
Okay. Yep. Watch, I'll be the one that won't show up.
Yeah.
But we'll see you then.
All right.
All right. Yeah, we got to figure out what we're going to do on Wednesday. So, yeah, I'm looking here on the rules, and it talks about all cases within the jurisdiction of the courts of appeal. So we got to find out, and again, I'll bet you we're going to go back to territorial. All right, anyway, take the next person.
Okay. Okay. Constance, you've been unmuted. Can you hear me? Your mic is open, Constance. It looks like from Connecticut. Are you there? I don't hear anything. Going once. Constance from Connecticut. Ending in, looks like 054. Okay, I'm going to move to the next victim here. I don't hear anything. You just get back in the queue if you come back. And the next one has no name. It just ends in
59. Yes.
Hello? Yes.
Can you hear me?
I can now.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I was muted. This is Connie from Connecticut. I'm not calling for myself. I'm calling for three of my friends. And they're all being sort of manipulated and monopolized by the court system. And they all need to get into federal court because the superior court kangaroo court system is, they can't get any justice. And can I tell you there are the three scenarios? One you're familiar with. You spoke with Benjamin the past couple of weeks. They're trying to get a guardianship on, they have a temporary on his mother, and they're trying to get one on him. It was initiated by his brother and his cousin. I think he needs to get it into federal court like you recommended, John. And Jan put him in touch with some lady in Philadelphia. She was saying, no, don't move it into federal court. Do an appeal. I'm not going to go into his case yet, but or just a little bit. But then there's Anna Taylor.
Well, an appeal is a possibility there because – you know, you're bringing it to the boss, that court's boss, okay? And they might be able to get some satisfaction there. And they may be able to deal with it as long as you can. But now you're going to be arguing the merits of the case, okay? The problem is jurisdiction is what really should be argued. The fact that they don't have jurisdiction, they don't have proof of claim. They don't have fiduciary authority. They don't have jurisdiction, personam jurisdiction. They may have subject matter jurisdiction, but they don't have those other three. And that falls under a federal court because it falls under the Constitution. So now,
you could try, though,
to get the upper court, the boss, to rule, to command the lower boss to obey the law, but really he's looking for a release, and I don't think they'll do that.
Right. So his mother had a temporary guardianship. They're trying to get one on Benjamin. Somebody came in and said there were dirty dishes on the counter, and that's what they used to try to get a guardian. Well, the part of what the reason why they tried to get a guardianship on him. Do they have a signed notarized affidavit indicating? But anyways, so he's looking at proving he's competent and doesn't need a guardian. And then you've got Anna Taylor. Anna Taylor had her baby at home with a midwife. She brought the baby to the hospital to make sure that the baby was okay. And all of a sudden, they're like, no, the baby needs surgery, and blah, blah, blah. There is a signed notarized affidavit from the nurse saying the baby was being neglected or showed signs of neglect and needed surgery. And they took the baby from Anna. It's been 2.5 years. She's still trying to get that baby back. In her case, she was filing papers in Middletown, Connecticut, because her court-appointed attorney would not file them, and she was wanted to file them. So while she was filing them, state police, who has, like, private first class, PFC, in front of his name, he and four armed guards jumped on little 100-pound Anna, took her to Middlesex Hospital, and she ended up in the mental ward. And a bunch of us did, like, call campaigns and stuff to get her out. Eric Jones did the radio, you know, radio blitzes to expose it. And so she did get out, but right now, the judge, I went to court with her in like June or July, and the attorneys for the guardian, which is the father's sister, they said, oh, they want a birth certificate to get the baby a birth certificate and a social security card. And the judge sort of put her eyes down and said, it's too soon for that. But anyway, she ordered a competency thing, Anna, to prove competency, because the state police and the guards jumped on her at the courthouse. But the state of Connecticut's name is all over it. The judge, the police, the court guards, I mean, they're all like in cahoots together. And so now she's trying to prove that she's competent. She's still trying to get her baby back, and they're trying to terminate parental rights. And they want to get the baby a birth certificate and social security card. And clearly, I don't think they have jurisdiction because the baby does not have a birth certificate. So that's another case. And she has a court notice to go to court. And she doesn't want to show up. And I don't blame her because I was there the last time. And there was a sheriff with her hand on her gun in her holster staring Anna down. And Anna was self-represented, and she kept on saying, talking about she is a beneficiary of her estate, including her child, which is part of her estate. And I don't know if she was saying the right thing, but the sheriff or deputy sheriff, whatever, in the courtroom, kept on telling her to sit down and be quiet, and had her right hand on her gun in her holster. And I was the only other person in the room other than all these attorneys. And then there's Tanya McCash, and she's been trying to get back her daughter. Actually, she was trying to get back all her three children for the past 4 years. And she is being forced to prove her competency. She was the one a few weeks ago, I said, she went to court, and Judge Manley in Santa Clara County, you know, she moved it to Alameda, then she tried to move it into federal. She didn't satisfy both criteria for federal, so they kicked it back to Alameda. But Santa Clara, Judge Manley, okay, that he runs a drug and mental health court, a mental health and family court or something like that. Anyways, hers was a criminal case where her ex-husband got a 5-year restraining order on her daughter, but she wasn't aware. So the next morning, she went to the school, and the principal chased her off the property. She went to San Jose police. They immediately put her in shackles and handcuffs and arrested her for violating a protective order that she wasn't aware of. And I jailed her out of jail. And anyway, somehow it went from Santa Clara criminal court to Judge Manley drug court, and she's not even doing drugs or anything. She's just trying to get back her child and has this violation of a restraining order that she didn't even know, protective order. So anyways, and Judge Manley was like, are you going to get treatment? And she's like, no. Are you going to take a court-appointed attorney? No. And so he said, you're going to jail for 6 weeks. No bail, no bonds, no nada. We did radio shows. I left comments on the Department of Justice comment line. I called FBI headquarters because she's not a citizen of the United States. She's a citizen of Slovenia and Canada, and she's been here on a green card for 18 years. But anyway, they ended up releasing her in 6 days, and in her file, interestingly enough, it said must be released. It's unclear who put that note in her file and why they put that note, but that was on a Monday. She was released on a Wednesday. They were trying to get her released, I think, she was released on a Thursday. They were trying to release her on Wednesday, but she was telling them she didn't want to go to court when she was in jail because she knows it's all rigged and she didn't know what they were going to try to do. Anyways, they released her on conditions. She has to, like, go pee in a cup every Friday to prove she's not doing drugs. She's not even into drugs or was arrested on a drug charge, and she has to pee in a cup every Friday to prove she has to pay for that test. So, but anyways, I'm telling you about these cases because these three cases, they're all friends of mine. They all need help. Tanya, I think, definitely needs to get into federal court. Right now, Judge Manley is, and Judge Manley has a YouTube video. He says, I have found that punishment has never helped anyone. Treatment has. Well, California pensions invest in big pharma. So he's up there pushing prescription drugs, and California pensions are getting bigger because he's getting people off of illegal drugs and putting them on the prescription drugs so the California pensions can get fatter. They're not going to get fatter off illegal drugs. Anyways, Tanya doesn't do drugs, but yet she's forced to pee in a cup every Friday. This is so, and now she went to court the other day, and he said, did you go to the doctor yet? She goes, no, it's not in the paperwork. He goes, well, I'm putting it in the paperwork now. He did tell her to do it, but he didn't put it as part of the court record. So this time he's putting it as part of the court record that she has to get prove that she's competent. She has to get a doctor to say she's competent to stand trial for the original criminal charges. So anyway, I'm telling you this because Tanya and Anna, and maybe even Benjamin, all need to get their cases into federal court and out of the superior court system. But when Tanya was calling somebody at NLA, they need that 2 or 3 page form letter to get it into federal court because I don't think any of them know how to do it or do it right.
Yeah, but one of the problems, I'm going to try to work on that because other people need that too. I may have something already done because I know I've moved cases already, so I should be able to find something and pull something together and put it up there for people to use. But here's the thing. You got to understand, I understand more than I ever did now. When we were first learning law, we were learning the procedures and how things work from a lawyer. And one of the things he told us was that that when you go into a federal court, that jurisdiction changes as the conversation proceeds on. Okay. Now we learned what was that lawyer's name from Jurisdictionary? Do you remember his name, Gerard? I can't think of his name. But anyway, we learned through Jurisdictionary. And So you got to be careful that you got to understand. Now, I'm going to be getting up soon the course, and the course will definitely have inside of it how to move a court case to a, you know, to a federal court and for cause. And you're only doing it to deal with the constitutional issue, nothing else. You're not discussing the case. You're not getting involved in any of that stuff. You're going there because your unalienable rights are being violated, and now you have to make sure you get into the right courts, number one, okay? That's the first big hurdle, okay? And then you have to stay on point. Be careful not to be moved into another or something you say or do. Okay, I'm beginning to realize that even if I'm applying certain codes like USC 42 and USC 4018 on a bureaucrat because they violated my rights and they acted under the color of law to do that, so you bring those codes in that deal with that. Well, am I not, maybe at the same time I'm doing that, maybe I'm changing my jurisdiction too. You see, I have to be clear that this is the jurisdiction to be applied upon them for penalty of abusing their powers. It has nothing to do with me. This is the criteria of the legislator concerning people who do these evil things that they did under the color of law. They came out with a badge and a cloak and everything saying I'm the law, and they violated me. Now, that's, you know, so you have to be careful. You have to figure out how to do that. And you have to, and you don't need to understand all these codes. I mean, look, when I first approached this, trying to understand statutes and everything, I realized I got to understand what these things are. And, you know, and I found out the statements I had made before I understood them are not valid statements. They were error. They made sense in my mind, but I lacked a certain knowledge and changed the whole thing around. Now, you know, you don't have to know all of the titles. You don't. You only have to know the ones that's affecting you, okay? But you don't need to know the laws in those titles because they don't apply to you. But you need to know the ones that apply to them, and again, there's only a couple. But you need to understand the bodies of laws and the jurisdictions thereof. That's what you need to understand. And then when you go into the federal court, now, one of the biggest hurdles to get into the federal court is they give you a paper to fill out, and it's a statutory paper to bring you into a statutory court. It's civil court. You're opening up a civil case. Now, if you're moving the case, you're not really filling a form, so you're bypassing that part. Because you're not filling anything out to get an index number or anything. They'll apply that to your case using your case to identify it with. But you're moving the court, which is just the paper you can put on. Now, you can put up the jurisdiction. Now, I put up a court of record under, you know, the common law, and that's not clear enough. It's got to be court of record under natural law and define it. Okay, that's much more powerful. And so you can move it in that way. And then you're dealing only with the constitutional violation, nothing else. That's the only thing you're going to talk about, how they violated you. And then what you expect. You have to have a good wherefore clause at the end. Wherefore, you know, they need to cease and desist their activities against me, okay? And you're not going to argue the case. You're not going to argue incompetence. You're not going to argue anything, okay? This case needs to cease and desist, and you have to detail it, the release of the prisoners, because, you know, in the case of the children are prisoners. They've been taken captive. They've been kidnapping. I'd go after them for kidnapping, and you can find that in USC 18, kidnapping.
Do you have an example of the 2 or 3 page form letter and the argument?
I'm writing it as we. I will be getting to writing that soon because it's become part. It's going to be part of the course that we're creating, and hopefully next week it'll be open. I hope we'll have 2 or 3 chapters together, maybe an introduction and 2 chapters, and be able to open it next week, and then maybe I can keep in ahead of the course and get the other chapters going. Because I want to get this open and going, but in that process, you know, that's not in the beginning chapters. But I'll see if I got what I got, and maybe try to find a couple hours to write it up. And again, you know, one of the problems is I would take what I got. I'm sure I got something, And I would sit down and read through it very carefully and see if I need to tweak it better. Because, again, every day that you read and study, your knowledge grows. And you're going to find, I find some errors here or there, and I got to correct them as I go, you know.
So do you have an example of a 2 or 3 page form letter moving it into federal court?
I have nothing that I could just go to grab and give it to you. I'll have to go research through my papers, pull something out, and then before I would give it to you or share it with anyone, I'd want to, take a good look at it and make sure that it also stands up to my knowledge today. And again, I could be a lot more careful today than I was, yesterday. I understand more every day, and in that understanding, you can define to keep yourself out of these troubles. They got all these traps there. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But I'll see what I can do. I got to get to it. You're not the only one asking for it, you know. It's just that I got other things. So, I'm in the middle of writing a book. We're writing a course. We're writing the judicial papers for the judiciary. We got 21 days to respond to our New York State gun case. I got an IRS case that I'm battling, and it has to be answered before Christmas. And that may sound far away, but it really isn't, you know. And again, when you're playing chess like this, you got to give it a lot of thought. So I will try to find the time to kind of jump ahead and write this particular paper, pull out what I got, and write a good paper, and then get it up there for people to use. But remember, you still have a lot more to learn. I would say the course that we're going to be putting up, okay, let me see if I got something open here. Okay, on the introduction, which we should have up, kind of lays out a picture. Chapter 1 will deal with Liberty Lost, but Chapter 2 will deal with the law. I'm almost done with that now, right now, with Chapter 2. And matter of fact, I got a lot of this stuff done because I've been writing for years and studying for years, so I've got all the materials. It's a matter of pulling it together and putting it together in a cognizant matter, so people can understand it and make sense and follow some kind of logic. But the law is the second one now. That's a very important chapter. That's the chapter you want to read and scrutinize and really understand what we're talking about here with law. And then you got to be able to articulate, write it down, in a very clear fashion. And when I first started doing this, I was trying to do this without footnotes because that really takes a lot of time and involvement. And I realized it couldn't be done. Because if you're not defining every phrase and every word you're speaking, they're going to make of it, there's other ways to look at things, you know? And they will interpret it the way they want to interpret it so that they can throw you out or get out of it or whatever.
With Tanya, she tried to move it into a federal court, and District 17 federal court remanded it back to Alameda County because she didn't satisfy the 2 criteria, only 1.
This is California, right?
California, yeah. She moved it to Alameda County from Santa Clara, and then she was trying to move it into federal court. They remanded it back to Alameda, and she went to court in Alameda. But Judge Manley, he has conditions. Not only can't she pee in a cup, she can't leave the county without permission. So he was named as a defendant in a lawsuit. And he should have recused himself from the case. He should have given it up to Alameda because she said she couldn't get due process in Santa Clara. And Alameda confirmed that they have jurisdiction.
But does she have the ability to make the battle to make a case? Does she have the ability to learn this stuff and then make the battle?
Yeah, she's a member, and she took your online Constitution course, and she was taking the civics. I don't know if she...
Okay, but bear in mind, the Constitution course that we gave is a very, very simple course. It's kind of an introductory to it. It's not really deep in there. Now, the civil course is a course that really gives us a lot of history, some common law, and also lays out on how America got to where it's at. You clearly see that by the time you get to the end of that course. Okay, the course that I'm writing now is I'm writing this book in such a fashion. It'll be a handbook. I mean, it's going to be a book, but like a handbook, you can write court cases out of it. Your procedure, process, give examples, forms, how to write a particular idea, how to move a case into federal court for cause. What does it mean for cause? What argument do you make in federal court when you go in for cause? You don't discuss the case that you're battling in the other court. You're talking about your violation of your rights. And then you got to make sure that you move the court to do the proper thing, to shut them down, cease and desist. It collapses their whole case. They can't even come out after you no more. And if you're asking for damages, which I would, monetary damages, I mean, all kinds of things. Also, I would make sure to write some notes and making it clear and point out how it is you're keeping your jurisdiction and the dangers of being moved into another jurisdictions, and which jurisdictions are you in danger of being moved into. If it's a civil case, the danger is being moved into USC 28. If it's a criminal case, the danger is being moved into USC 18. All the other stuff really doesn't apply too much to us because it gets into bankruptcy or and different issues, you know. A person becoming a citizen and so on. You know, those are all kinds of different bodies of law, and each one of them has their own jurisdiction. And only 27 of them have been enacted and is called positive law, which is enacted law through legislation by human beings, okay, not to be confused by natural law. And again, I wouldn't use common law anymore. I would use the word natural law. Of course, you quote in different things. You quote U.S. Supreme Court rulings that use common law. But what I would do next to the common law, put in brackets and make it natural. I'd be pointing towards the fact that natural law and common law are synonymous, not to be understood, not to be misunderstood as federal district rulings or in the case of state court, rulings within other county by other judges through in the superior court system. But again, you know, all this stuff takes time. And I'm working,
right,
you know, day and night, night and day, literally. I mean, I just this weekend, I must have put on the what was there, 24, 48 hours between Saturday and Sunday. I probably worked at least 30, 35 hours on this book, you know.
Yeah. I'm a quick learner. I would be willing to help you expedite this for Tanya, Benjamin, and Anna. I did go up against the U.S., the Office of Inspector General. I went up against the senior attorney at the Office of Inspector General when I worked for the FDA because I searched for, I had three EEOC cases, and I was searching for attorneys. No attorney would take my case. And
no, they won't.
I wanted a $10,000 or $15,000 retainer. So I said, okay.
Yeah, and they're going to lose anyway.
Huh?
And they'll lose anyway. Because they will never make the battle the way it has to be made. There's only one way you can win this case, okay? And that is to beat them in a chess game using the law. And hopefully there's still enough fear in these judges to realize that they don't want to take certain risks. And you got to put them into those positions to take that risk. And where they and you hope that there's the kind of, that they're not that lost. You know, look, there's some people that are so far gone and so far lost that they don't care about nothing, okay? They've already taken the jump. They're already falling down the cliff. So they're willing to do anything. And you do get judges like that from time to time. Matter of fact, you call him the fixer, you know, the guy he's not afraid even to go to jail if that's what it's got to be. He's making the money, and he's already down the cliff. If we move back to justice, he knows he's going to jail.
Right. So I didn't know the law and stuff, and I wasn't willing to dish out 10 or 15 grand as a retainer for one of these attorneys. who said, I don't know if I can win this case because nobody wins against the government. So I represented myself, and I learned the regulations and everything. And I prevailed in my first case, up again, and the judge used my words as to why I prevailed. And the attorney, the senior attorney from the Office of Inspector General, he taught me really well, you know, because I studied his motions, how he responded to my motions, so on and so forth. I beat him, okay? I beat him, and I wanted to take it, and then I hired a huge law firm, and I ended up, I had two cases at the time, and then they terminated me for bizarre conduct because I became electrically sensitive at my FDA job after they hit me in the temple with nano and tried to fuse it using infrared technology. Anyways, they finished the deal. And so I took a settlement, and I'm not supposed to talk about it. I don't care. I'm talking about it because they didn't stop retaliating. They're using Lockheed Martin and government contractors.
All right, well, look, why don't we do this? Why don't we do this? Because we have other people in the queue. Get a hold of Jan. We're going to be meeting with a couple of paralegals soon. As a matter of fact, Jan, have we set anything up for that meeting yet? Where are we at with that? I know I wanted to talk with, I think it was Carl, about that paper he gave us, and that we want to set up a meeting, yeah, the two of them.
We haven't set it up because we need to go over the paper with our one paralegal before we go to the general meeting.
Okay, well, let's set that meeting up, get that done, and then we'll set another meeting. And what's your first name again?
My name is Constance Robinson. You can Google me. I used to do FDA presentations.
What's your first name?
Connie. I go by Connie, but my name is Constance.
Okay, well, Connie,
and
get a hold of Jan.
Thousands of dollars to shut my mouth and leave the government, okay?
Right, look,
and
get a hold of Jan. Get a hold of Jan, and you can find him on the directory, his phone number, or send him an email, jan@nationallibertyalliance.org. And Jan, make sure she comes to the meeting with the paralegals. Maybe there's something you could do to work with us to help us. And then maybe we can carry some of this, you know, strategy conversation there. And again, I'll try to find time to work on that particular paper, but it's not going to be in the next few days. I really got to get my focus right now is to get three chapters done, at least two chapters and an introduction, possibly three chapters and an introduction, probably two and an introduction. Get that up, get this course open so people can get in there and start taking this course. And you'd be very interested to get into this course because the chapter two is on the law, and that's an important one. Okay.
So, okay, thank you.
And court is back further, but we'll have to find the time to do something on the form. But again, you got to be careful with jurisdiction.
Yeah, and I just want to say one thing. The two out of the three cases I just mentioned have pulled my heartstrings because they are trying to get back their children. They are losing precious moments that they can never recoup, birthdays, Christmas, holidays, taking care of them when they're sick. I mean, it's really, you know, and then caring for his elderly mom in her later years, you know. And so all three cases pull at my heartstrings. But I will do, I'm willing to pay whatever it takes to help these three people. It's not anything that I'm going to gain, but I desperately want to help them. And this is a little out of my ballpark. I'm used to dealing with EEOC. I learned that process. But this is out of my, you know, a lot out of my comfort zone, and I don't.
All right. Well, let's. You know, we're running close to the end here, and there's other people in the queue. I want to get them in there, but let's connect in the next, hopefully this week sometime.
Okay, that would be great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Gerard. You got it.
Okay. Joe from California. Go ahead, Joe. You're on mute.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
First of all, I just wanted to say I appreciate everything you guys are doing. And I understand it's a lot of work to try and get all your paper together. I'm trying to write my own papers right now, and it always needs more revising. And I actually was the person who sent in the question earlier, the multi-part question, because I have a bench warrant. And I'm just wondering how I'm going to really go about this. Well, it's really shady because I drove all
well,
the
what
way
kind
to
of
Southern
court
Florida,
is it? A
California.
Town court? what it's kind of court?
State court? The fourth district or something? Municipal? Yeah, I forgot what it is right now, but it's in South Dakota, in Deadwood, South Dakota.
Okay, but is it a state court, a county court, a village court, a town court, federal court?
It's a state court, and it's a criminal court.
Okay, so it's a criminal court. It's a state, then it's got to be a state or a county court. I think it has to be a state court, as a matter of fact. But
the state's
the
one that pressed charges, so.
And what's the charges?
All kinds of stuff at first, but then they dropped most of it. And then they opened another case, and they're trying to combine the two.
Were you indicted?
So it's a little clear. Well, what happened is I was pulled over for supposedly not stopping at a stop sign, which I did actually stop at the stop sign. And I had been doing enough research to understand I didn't necessarily need a license. So I attempted to ask the questions to clarify what I had been reading. And they got really frustrated with that. And through some back and forth, eventually they broke my window out and drug me out of the car because I wouldn't consent, and they arrested me, took all my stuff. 10 days later, I eventually bailed out because they were trying to steal my car and, auction it off or something. So I'm trying to figure out the whole time, going back and forth from California to South Dakota, how to actually get myself out of the situation when I didn't do anything in the first place. I did have some pot on me.
Well, you know, I still got a question. What court you in? Are you in a city court? Because, you know, I don't know. State courts don't deal with traffic. I'm aware of anyway. New York, they don't.
It's a pretty small town. I don't know if you've been to Deadwood, South Dakota, but.
Well, a town. Now you get into a town, and it's a town court, maybe.
Yeah, but they raise it up. They gave him criminal charges somehow. Did they say you risked
the
arrest?
Yeah, but look at
they
do criminal charges in these town courts.
They charged me with possession, and they actually trumped up a bunch of crazy possession charges of all these weird, exotic drugs that I never even had or heard of, and then they sent them in and got the results back, and almost everything came back completely negative. So I did have, some hash and some pot on me, but after arresting me and breaking out my window and taking all my money and everything they did, they didn't really have anything to justify it with just the pot charges, because that's a ticket out there now for less than 2 ounces. So somehow they're trying to stick me with some, I don't even know which drug, but they dropped it from 10 years down to 6 weeks. And then when I got into it with the lawyer about how he wasn't really doing his job, he officially dropped me as a client when I drove all the way out there for court. And at that point, I wasn't really sure how to proceed, and I didn't want to make the wrong move, so I just took back everything he did, and I said I would be showing back up pro prea persona. And when I came back to court, I was running a little bit late, so I called them at 8 o'clock in the morning when the courthouse opened, and I had to be there at 9 to let them know I'd be a couple hours late, but I'd still be plenty on time. Well, there's only a couple routes between where I was and where I was going, and they pulled me over twice. So I have the tickets and everything. I still made it there by 2:30, and they were done seeing everybody, and they wouldn't let me into court. She said, there's a bench warrant already issued for you. It goes into effect in the morning. And I'm sitting there, and she won't let me talk to the judge. She won't let me get into the court, telling me that I don't have a lawyer.
Was this,
when
hold on a minute.
Me as a client.
Was this a traffic court?
No, it was criminal court.
Well, they may have called it a criminal they may call it a crime, but what kind of court are you in? What kind of other cases were being heard in that court?
Everything really seemed to be being heard in that court. But
well, yeah, tell me some of the things. I mean, this sounds like a town court or a city court.
I was in, they wouldn't really specify on anything. They wouldn't tell me, you know. All I know from the paperwork is it's the Fourth Circuit. So
yeah, I'm not sure how to work with
the... I couldn't get the jurisdiction from them or anything like that. They acted like that was just the area that I had been arrested in and that there was no other jurisdiction to be discussed.
Mm-hmm.
So that was me and the lawyer, and then when he dropped me, they wouldn't let me speak anymore, pretty much. And they put a bench warrant out for my arrest. So I pretty much prepared how to go in there and, you know, with my notes and everything, defend myself. And
well, again, you know, look, here's where we're at. here's where we're at. You know, again, you know, I decided to write a book because I not only for myself to bring all these things together and get things clear in my own mind, but also to bring it to a place where the things that every common person should know. Okay, if you want to have liberty in this nation, you first of all need to understand what liberty is. Liberty is freedom from the law. That's the best definition I can figure for that. Freedom from law. Because you want to be free from the government and any law they can make against you. That's what liberty is. And now, once you understand, everybody should know that, okay? Now, there are fundamental things and points and positions that people need to have. And I figure, well, if I could bring it into a book and say, these are the things, the absolute requirements that everyone must know. And here's the tools to be able to do everything you need to do in a court to deal with your problems, okay? How to get into them, how to write the papers, the forms, everything. So all of that said and done, you know, you need that basic structure in order to fight this problem, okay? Because you're going to frustrate the court and you're going to frustrate yourself. They're also going to call you, they call us that too. They'll call you a sovereign citizen, which means you're a cop killer, you know? And that's the game they play with you. But
well, I'm carefully constructing my documents, and I have, you know, an affidavit of status and, you know, a declaration of rights. And
well, again, that's
the power of attorney and all that stuff. So where when I go in there, at least understand.
Look at you, but you look at you. Look, whoa. You're defending yourself. You shouldn't be defending yourself. They should be defending themselves from you. You're going to go into court,
well,
battle the court.
Problem is,
you've got to go on the offense. They got to go on the defense. Okay?
It's hard to do that.
For instance, I'll read this. I was just looking this up before for someone else. Once challenged, jurisdiction cannot be assumed. It must be proven to exist. So you want to know what the jurisdiction of this court is. By what authority do you act? Okay. Do they have you can move the court to put dismissal for lack of personam jurisdiction, but you have to understand what that jurisdiction is and be able to defend that. I know you could do that probably in any court. I don't care what court you brought into. You could probably do that in any court and win if you understand the court that you're in. Because if they're applying statutes on you, you're in the wrong court. If they're applying statutes of you, it's not a court of nature. It's not a natural law court.
That's the problem. Is I don't want to do anything in any other court other than a natural law court. So when I go in there,
well, that's the problem we all really have.
Right, but that's is there the a battle. Solution to that problem? Is what I'm worried about because I'm facing it right now, and I'm sure there's other people in a similar situation, and I'm thinking. We need some kind of system to where we go in and actually hold them responsible for like violating our rights. And if we can get paid out,
people,
and then we progress that method.
Listen, people are looking for something, but they don't know what it looks like. You're looking for a common law court, a court of record, but you don't know what it looks like. You see? And that's the problem. I mean, that's as simple as I can put it. Now you got homework to do. What is a common law court? What does it look like? How do I know? And it gets deeper than that. And again, you know, I come to realize to understand this stuff, you have to understand the structure of law in this country, okay? Starts on the federal level, in my opinion. That's where I started anyway, to understand the structure of law, okay? And how these things work. You have to acknowledge the fact that statutes are law, and some statutes are regulation. It depends on if it's been enacted by Congress or not. Maybe it's up there just for a regulation. And then you have to have, so there's jurisdiction and there's subject matter jurisdiction. Okay? Now, they may have subject matter, but they certainly, if it's statutory, they don't have personam jurisdiction. And now, how do you fight
well,
that.
I won't presume to know everything because I definitely don't, but this happened almost 2 years ago now. So I've been studying up on everything and I feel confident. Like actually,
yeah, but if you're
going
to win,
really easy to handle the whole problem. if they
look
let
at,
me
there's only
the
two
court,
ways you
could
win.
By the law. So
there's
the
only two. There's only.
And that's
listen.
Where I'm trying to figure out a solution to.
Yeah, look at. I'm telling you, I've been puzzling this for years. There's only two ways you can win. Only two ways. You can find your court of record, walk in there, tell your story, and you're done. Because a court of record, a court that is going to apply nature's law on the court, you're going to get through. And you'll win that with an affidavit. The other side won't do that, and it's over. You're done. You're out of there. Okay? That's one way. But that's the problem. What does a court of record look like? How can you recognize it? Does it morph into something else as time goes on and morph from jurisdiction to jurisdiction like the federal courts do? So that's one. The other one is to come in there, understand the law enough, just enough to understand what these laws are, how what authority they have. What power, authority, what jurisdiction they have, and be able to put things together in such a way, it's a chess game, to put this guy into checkmate. You're talking about the judge. I come to realize every time I walk in a court, you're fighting the judge. You never get to the case because you got to deal with that clown with the cape on that chair up there. You always got to fight with him. They just won't leave you alone. Okay? So you have to put him in a box to feel that he can't make the decision against you because he doesn't have a place to hang his hat. He's going to be at risk. It's something dangling that can bite him in the rear end later on. And then you have to have a judge that's, you know, if you're talking about state judge and county judges, and especially town judges and city judges, forget about it. They have no clue. They don't even know. They know nothing. They're really dumb. Okay. But there's only two ways to win it. So you can push the judge to a point where he has to rule, and usually what he'll try to do is push the other side to deal.
Yeah, well, I just don't want to make a deal, and I don't want to subject myself.
No. You're missing my point. No. You're not making a deal with them. They got
to
come to you and say, we're going to drop this whole thing. That's the deal.
But hold on. I don't want to have to do that. I want to be able to walk in there and say, hey, I'm a man, and I didn't hurt anybody, and they broke into my car, kidnapped
Nobody's
me.
None of these people are going to understand this.
I understand what you're talking about.
I think
we need to figure out how to move the court. We have to actually go in there and say, whose job is it to do what, and make sure they do it. You know what I mean? Like, can't we actually take part in, like, a citizen's part in making sure they do their job? My buddy wants to, like, go with me, videotape the whole thing, and I'm thinking, if I can go in there, prove the fraud, what do I do with it? What do I do with it at that point?
If
we have no control
do.
Over the courts except for
Look
petitioning
it.
To them.
Listen. I already gave – there's only two solutions. The other solution is to open courts of justice again. That's what we're fighting for here at National Liberty Alliance, is to get the courts of justice to open in every county across America. And until we can get that done – you know, we're not a free people anymore. So that's the one battle. Those courts of justice have been closed. They've been concealed. They've sealed the doors on them. You can't get access into them. Listen, you got to listen to me because I'm hearing some mistakes in your thinking. I'm trying to help you to correct it. And I know some of the answers may not be sufficient enough for you to be able to, you know, connect with to get that correction, because there's a lot involved here. I'm telling you right now, some of the things you just said are just going to cause more problems. You're going to bury yourself deeper. You're not going to get – if you think you're going to find your court of record, you're not going to find it. It's not there, okay? But doesn't mean that the – you got to get the right judge, okay? And that's why I say move it into federal court. You make it an issue of jurisdiction, violation of your right of due process. That's your battle. And you bring it to a judge who has also concealed courts of justice, but you bring it to him in such a way and lay out your case in such a way that he feels obligated to do something, to do the right thing, because if he doesn't, he's not protected. He doesn't have his condom on. You know, he's just not protected. Okay, so you gotta figure out how to do that. Now that's done. It really couldn't be quite simple. Again, you got to lay the facts out and define the court, the jurisdiction you came in on, the jurisdiction they keep moving you into, and put it to a position where he has no place to hide. Look, they hide when you talk to them. You want common law, no problem. We're going to give you common law. You know, we'll go through the process. We may get there. Let's see if we can get there. Common law is going to be district court decisions combining. That's their common law. Okay, that's not real common law. It's not the common law we're looking for. We're looking for natural law. But you see, you got to place it in the hanger's hat. Define it a little tighter, what you mean by common law. Make it natural law and divide it clearly. And now he's got a dilemma in here. He's got a problem. He's got an itch that needs to be scratched. He's got to work his way around, okay? Now, again, there are some judges, and maybe they got something on them, and they don't care. They'll do anything. Look, I am really surprised that the judge up here in New York, I'm not really surprised, because look, he had a gun to his head. There's no doubt about it. Damned if he didn't, damned if he don't. Because he took the chance to stick with the status quo. He took the chance to stick with the governor and the legislators. He took the chance to stick with other court judges, maybe. Okay, but what he done was violate the law that could bite him in the rear end down the road. Why? Because, you know, they're really dumb if they haven't figured it out yet that the swamp is being drained and eventually they're going to be exposed as much as anyone else.
You know what I find interesting is that woman that was on here last and she said they wrote on her paper, must release. Now, here's a woman that's here that's not a citizen on a green card. She has no birth certificate. She has no driver's license. She has nothing that they can show that they contracted with her. And somebody knew that. Somebody knew that they never had any jurisdiction on this woman, that they not even a adhesion contract that they could say, well, you signed that, so now you're here in this box. So she was never in a box. And whoever that was, somebody in that court understood that they had nothing to hang their hat on. That's why they said must release. And if she knew exactly what it was, she could now turn around and sue them based on that whole premise right there. You know, why do you think they wrote must release? Because they had nothing that they could show that she consented to any of this. They always want your consent. And that's what you're giving them when you go to court, you know, when you're answering them in this, and that's why they change the jurisdiction, because they're contracting with you. And ultimately, that's what it is. They're turning it into a commercial process. And that's what you have to understand. And if they're going to use that UCC, which is what it's all based on, my goodness, there's 100 places they can go to wrap you up. And all you got to do is open your mouth and say the wrong thing, and boom, they got you. I mean, look at me. I was in court, and I had the default paper from the clerk, and the judge says, well, what do you want me to do? And I said, well, you could dismiss it. Well, guess what? I just gave him permission back into the case, didn't I? And that's what he did.
Well, I appreciate the way you guys are handling it. You know, I get a little bit ahead of myself because my situation's a little pressing, and I'd like to, you know, make something of it instead of it just being a waste. And really,
how much time do you think you have?
When they're lying to my face, you know, and I just really don't want to get in a situation to where I finally get to a jury, and now we haven't gotten to educate a jury yet. So how do I actually get this jury to understand that the power is in their hands and that they don't?
Well, let me tell you something.
What
they're,
the judge
they're not
tells
gonna...
them about statutes and codes, and actually, you know, inform the jury so it'll actually help my trial. That's,
look, if
you, know,
you can get to a jury. They don't even want you to get to a jury because that's not what they do. They don't like jury trials because there's a chance that they could lose control of the jury. As tight as they do it, that's what happened out in Oregon and Nevada. They lost control of the juries because they got overhanded and the jury got sick of them and said not guilty. And that's why they don't like jury trials. They want to make deals. Look, you're going to go in there and you're going to say, I'm this and I'm that, I'm a man and I can't. And they're going to say, oh, he's crazy. They're going to send you to a hospital. They're going to drug you. This is what they do.
I'm planning on it. You know, I'm expecting all of this stuff.
Look, they're going to say you're crazy, and you got to take this mental evaluation. They always pull that crap. You know, you got to go in front of a mental health person to say that you're not crazy. We don't understand what you're saying. Obviously, you know, you must have some illusions and delusions, and they'll pull all that stuff to keep you out from ever getting to a jury. So that's all I can tell you. You know that they don't want you to get in front of a jury, and then they're gonna. And if you ever even assemble a jury and doing it yourself, you know, you have to know how to voir dire a jury and all that other baloney. You know, you got to get through that whole process, and they're going to do whatever they can to have you in contempt of court before that. That's what I think anyway. But you know, it's the criminal. What do you think they call it? The criminal justice system. They're not kidding. You know, because it is criminal.
Yeah, I know. I'm just hoping.
So I don't know. Just
be
careful because I know you feel real righteous and you understand where you're coming from. But when you get like that and you go in there and you put your foot down, they'll use that against you. They'll use it to make it seem like you're crazy. You know.
Well, I'm not going to try and deny or do anything that I'm not supposed to. I'm going to make it to where they have to admit what they're doing wrong, and hopefully. You know, like you said, put them in a box and not have to admit anything that can be put on the record as me sounding crazy. Because nobody wants to say that.
Nobody wants
to actually say that on the record if you can avoid it. But if you can get the point across that you understand that much.
I'm convinced that they give these judges classes on how to deal with people that want natural law and common law and use the words like sovereign. They say if you get somebody to come in and they say this, this, and that, this is where you go with them, and they tell them, and a big part of that is to entrap you. You know, we've seen
100%.
It so
the lawyer pulled me in the back room and started going over all kinds of stuff that's on YouTube, trying to quiz me on what my approach was that I wanted to use in court, and I was just letting him go, you know, seeing like what's that kind of stuff he was coming up with, and he was talking about the flag and, you know, silly arguments, and I just really didn't give him anything. But he just kept fishing and fishing because
you want to hang one of those things. That would have been your mental evaluation. Oh yeah, that's an Admiralty flag. Oh, okay, he's a nut.
Yeah,
anyway,
exactly.
That's the best I could tell you. I don't know what to tell you in such short time, John. I don't know where you're going to go with it or how you can stop it or stall it. You know, the best thing to do is try to stall it. But anyway, I don't know. Whatever you can do there. Anyway, we're after time now, so time to shut the recording off. And it's been good, and we'll try to pick these things up next week. Okay? Did I lose everybody?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. All right, well, I'm going to end it, and we'll see everybody next week. Thank you very much for your for the good conversation and the thoughts. And we got that meeting Wednesday. Don't forget, Wednesday, for the SAFE Act. Okay, good night, and God bless.